This episode of the Rick Emerson Show is made possible by our good friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Galstaff, you have entered the door to the north. You are now by yourself, standing in a dark room. The pungent stench of mildew emanates from the wet dungeon walls.
Where are the Cheetos?
They're right next to you.
I cast a spell.
Where's the Mountain Dew?
In the fridge, duh.
I want to cast a spell.
Can I have a Mountain Dew?
Yes, you can have a Mountain Dew. Just go get it.
I can cast any of these, right? On the list?
Yes, any of the first level ones.
I'm going to get a soda. Anyone want one? Hey, Graham, I'm not in the room, right?
What room?
I want to cast Magic Missile.
The room where he's casting all these spells from.
He hasn't cast anything yet.
I am, though, if you'd listen. I'm casting Magic Missile.
Why are you casting Magic Missile? There's nothing to attack here.
I'm attacking the darkness.
Fine, fine. You attack the darkness. There's an elf in front of you.
Whoa!
That's me, right?
He's wearing a brown tunic, and he has gray hair and blue eyes.
No, I don't. I have gray eyes.
Let me see that sheet.
Well, it says I have, blue, but I decided I wanted gray eyes.
Whatever. Okay, you guys can talk to each other now if you want.
Hello.
Hello.
I am Galstaff, Sorcerer of Light.
Then how come you had to cast Magic Missile?
you guys are being attacked.
Do I see that happening?
No, you're outside by the tavern.
Cool, I get drunk.
There are seven ogres surrounding you.
How could they surround us? I had Mordenkainen's magical watchdog cast.
No, you didn't.
I'm getting drunk. Are there any girls there?
I totally did. You asked me if I wanted any equipment before this adventure, and I said no. But I need material components for all my spells, so I cast Mordenkainen's faithful watchdog.
But you never actually cast it.
Roll the dice to see if I'm getting drunk.
Yeah, you are.
Are there any girls there?
Yeah.
I did, though. I completely said when you asked me.
No, you didn't. You didn't actually say that you were casting the spell. So now there's ogres, okay?
Ogres? Man, I got an ogre slaying knife. It's got a +9 against ogres.
You're not there. You're getting drunk.
Okay, but if there's any girls there, I want to dupe them.
It's funny and sad because it's true. All the best comedy comes from Don. It is 19 minutes after the hour of... I was going to do a joke there where I rolled the dice and said one, but that doesn't make any sense. It really is just 1:19. In the year of our Lord, 2010, thank you for coming along and making a part of your listening day. We are live from the fleshly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network. Thank you for joining us on this Monday. It's 503-505-6964 if you would like to join us telephonically today. It is 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964 with your comments, questions, clarifications, combinations of the above three things, whatever it is you might have to contribute to today's intellectual and comedic discourse. It's 503-505-6964. You can also Skype if you would like. That is Rick Emerson Show. That is the username there. That is Skype Rick Emerson Show. We are on the text box as well. You can also email. It's Rick at RickEmerson.com. Rick at RickEmerson.com. Or Dawn Taylor can be emailed as well. That is Dawn, D-A-W-N, at RickEmerson.com. That's a comedy group called the Dead Ale Wives. I don't even know the name of that sketch, but Aaron Duran sent it to me. I don't know, like two and a half, three years ago. Here's the great thing about that, and this is unsurprising but awesome, is that multiple sort of video interpretations of that video accompaniments have been made on the YouTubes, and the one that I first saw was, I'm not even sure where the creatures were from, if they were like World of Warcraft characters or whatever, but a guy had just made a visual accompaniment where it was on YouTube where it was just a video of a bunch of monsters actually playing Dungeons & Dragons. And I think it might have been like actual creatures from the game just sitting around. But of course, you know, with like Cheeto-stained fingers. And because, you know, in a vast exaggeration of what those games are really like.
Right.
It bears no, there's no resemblance to reality at all. Does it, Don?
No, not at all.
Of course not.
Not in my experience.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later on today, we have Job Watch on the way. Job Watch, also Darwin Watch. Always a good way to start the week. Am I raising the mean IQ just 0.1%? What else do we have coming up today? Greg Nibbler and Sarah X. Dillon will be in the studio with us. Greg and Sarah from Fun Employment Radio. Be joining us also Mr. Aaron Duran himself from geekinthecity.com will be on later this hour with the Week in Geek. And the big thing, and I put up a blog post and sent out a whole thing about this weekend. Coming up immediately following today's program, which will be around, today. Immediately following the Rick Emerson show, or if you're listening to this on the, if you were listening to this in the future, if you're listening to this on the live stream, you know, the encore stream, the live playback, or on your mobile device or whatever, the order of programs usually on that replay stream is as follows. We do Legion of News encores, followed by an encore of this show. Today we are going to be following all of, and actually all this week, we're going to be following each encore of the Rick Emerson Show with a different episode of AZ, which is the ongoing zombie-based radio drama based here in Portland, Oregon, that aired originally a couple years ago. And so in honor of Halloween, we're going to be airing one episode of AZ every day following the Rick Emerson Show, not just, you know, live when the show actually wraps, but then on the live stream for the next, whenever, you know, 19, 22 hours, whatever it is. So that is coming at me, up immediately following today. Show. We'll have an episode of AZ, a different episode every day. And then this coming Sunday, Halloween, we're going to have an all-day marathon, a back-to-back marathon of all of the AZ episodes, AZ the Complete Series, as well as an interview with Aaron Duran and Jason Crump. They're going to talk about the creation of it, the history, the backstory, the you know, the experience of the actual production itself and all of that. So that is on the way later on this afternoon. Don Taylor is tracking the following stories for you on this Monday. Would you like a moment?
I would like a moment. Actually, could you hand me the things that are on the printer behind you? Thank you.
All right.
Or the one thing or two things.
Don Taylor's working on the following headlines for you on this Monday.
A man shoots two people dead in a strange shooting spree. A white woman gives birth to a black child after watching a porn star on TV. And New Zealanders are rallying to keep the Hobbit in country.
I don't understand the second of those three stories. I understand what the words mean, that a white woman gives birth to a black child after watching a porn film on TV.
She watched a high-definition 3D porn film with a black man and believes that's why she had
a black baby. She watched it with a black man. Do you mean that a black man was sitting on the sofa next to her?
No, she said there was a black man in the porn, and even though she herself is white and her husband is white, she says this is why she had a black child.
This is some new definition of news with which I was not previously familiar, isn't it?
Possibly.
Okay.
It was under technology on the website I was looking at.
Well, that would really fall. I believe that would fall under the umbrella of exciting new developments in science. Well, all right then. It's 503-505-6964. So that is coming up. One of those stories followed by an encore of Legion of News and AZ and all of the stuff. So we're going to be doing those three things back to back today. So this show will wrap. We'll do one episode of AZ. Again, we're doing one of those each and every day all the way through this coming Sunday when we're going to be doing an all-day marathon. We'll also have an encore of Legion of News on the live stream as well. In today's program, Job Watch, Darwin Watch, those stories. Greg and Sarah from FunEmploymentRadio.com. Aaron Duran at The Week in Geek. All of that, and just real quickly, just speaking of this week and things that are happening on various timelines. So today is the final day to get your submissions for the Rick Emerson Show's Geek-O-Lantern contest submitted, and we've got a few more that have gone up over the weekend. I don't know if you actually saw these. I'm going there right now, so I can make sure that I get the names correct. But if you have not gone to rickemerson.com/pictures at this very moment, you ought to be doing that. That's, let's see, I'm looking right now. All right, here's a brand new one. One has actually gone up just, like, since this morning. Have you seen, like, the latest submissions for the Geek-O-Lantern contest?
I saw one of them. I saw the horrible, scary Joker one.
So there's a guy named Jason. Listener Jason submitted what he called the Joker Lantern. So that's it. RickEmerson.com/pictures.
Excellent and horrifying.
You go to the Geek O' Lantern contest catalog. Also, apparently, somebody who I'm looking to make sure I get the name correctly. So, listener Robin submitted a Bender Bending Rodriguez.
I saw that one too.
Geek O' Lantern.
Yes, that's very.
Have you seen the R2-D2?
Yes, I have been keeping up with the Geek O' Lanterns, and they're awesome. They're really good.
It's really fantastic. So
now it's going to be difficult to pick winners.
Yeah, but fortunately, I have you to help me bear the brunt of that. So all of the blame and praise won't go on my narrow, bony shoulders, Don. You'll be here to, whether we choose poorly or wisely, you'll suffer the blame or exult in the adulation along with me.
I think we're just going to have to find ways to give prizes to everyone, even if they don't get the Think Geek prizes. They're going to have to get something from our stack of things.
Perhaps you can give somebody
goals or something.
You can give one of them a rubdown of some kind.
Nothing that involves, actual physical contact.
Well, you were just saying last hour that your sexual desire was such that it couldn't be quenched.
I said I was just doing just fine in that regard.
I think the phrase you used last hour was can't get enough.
Well, there's that.
So I'm just saying, I'm trying to find ways. Look, I'm trying to make it a win-win situation for you and your apparently raging libido.
Unfortunately, when I got married, we made that agreement with no whoring.
Oh, come on. This isn't whoring. This is slutting. There's a difference.
And he reminds me of that all the time. Remember, no whoring, he says, as I leave the house to go have drinks with people.
What about floozing?
That's true. We didn't talk about floozing. Maybe I could flooze a little.
All right. It's like the difference between a spree and a jag. You know, so it's all in the lexicon.
Yeah. So is floozing like just above the waist?
I don't know. Actually, floozing is
is more like you're wearing a feather boa acting really flirty, isn't it?
In a speakeasy. Hey, speaking of speakeasy,
you call everyone big boy.
Have you even dressing up as a Gibson girl? Are you watching Boardwalk Empire?
I am.
Oh my God! So I just started watching that this weekend.
I haven't caught up. I didn't get to last night's yet.
Well, I'm not even that far. I'm like three back. I'm only on episode 3 out of 6.
Isn't it excellent? I didn't want to push it on you because I know that you're all full up on TV, and but now that there's no Mad Men.
No, well, that was the thing. I hadn't watched it because Mad Men, it was like every Sunday. Sunday was like, God damn, it was like Mad Men and Dexter. And the Eastbound and Down, about which we'll talk in a second, there's all this stuff going on, and it's like, and Seamus, had been on me like white on rice about Boardwalk Empire. He's like, you got to watch it. It's like, it's fantastic. And it was that thing where, and I find myself telling this to people all the time about so many shows, where it's like, I believe you. I'm sure that it's great. Sometimes when people say, you really ought to watch whatever, and you're like, yeah, I'll get to that. I'm just real busy these days. But sometimes that's just like, I don't trust you or your recommendations, and I think that whatever you're trying to foist onto me is probably crap. So, I'm going to lie right now, and, I will pretend that I'm going to put it on my list, and you're going to pretend to believe me, and then we'll never bring it up again.
I have had, though, you got to admit, I've had a pretty good track record with TV so far.
It really is true. Your recommendations have been, they've been pretty spot on. What I haven't watched yet, though, is that QI show that you gave me.
Oh, yeah.
It's sitting on my computer. I haven't viewed it yet. But with Mad Men gone, I was like sort of sifting through my email, and I got in 2 or 3 people in a row a while back that had emailed me like, oh, are you watching Boardwalk Empire? It's fantastic. And I thought, well, no better time than now. Because, my wife is gone, and so it's not like I got loads of free time because I'm doing that thing where when she's, the paradox is when she actually comes back, I will be just probably exhausted and grumpy and wanting her to leave again right away, only because I'm trying to use all of this time where she is gone, which is a substantial period of time. It's like 4.5 weeks or something. I'm trying to use this period of time to get caught up on, like, everything that I haven't been caught up on. I mean, that feeling where it's like you just get a to-do list that is just like, it's like the River Ganges, it flows. Here's an example of what I'm talking about. I own a shredder. Which, like to leave your financial crap out in the trash or whatever. And also, I find it sort of cathartic. I just enjoy staying up till all hours of the night just shredding paper. But even my shredding has gotten so behind that I now have like supplemental. Because I have this whole section next to the shredder. It's like a little sort of inbox where I put papers that need to be disposed of that way. It just sort of obliterated into little confetti. And it's actually overflowing to the extent that I now have 2 supplemental bags of things sitting. I don't even have time to shred properly. So I'm trying to get all caught up.
I use all of mine. I don't actually have a shredder, but what I do is I burn it in the fireplace. I use it for fireplace kindling.
Well done.
And the thing is, it's only just started getting cold enough for the fire. So I have a huge box of things that need to be burned in the fireplace.
So what I've started doing is, because I mentioned this on Friday, I think I made this glorious discovery that I can watch things via Netflix on my on my iPhone. And it's not like I can't do that with other stuff, but it's like, it's so difficult. You got to drag and drop, and you got to transfer the file and wait 10 seconds for it to move.
You can't walk to the kitchen with it in your hand
exactly.
while getting a snack.
That's what I'm saying. So my thing now is that I'm trying to catch up on a lot of things. If there's stuff that I've been meaning to get watched, I'm just doing it on my iPhone while I'm in the kitchen, feeding the dogs or making dinner or whatever. And so last night I had all
making
this...
Making dinner.
By which I mean thawing something and or microwaving something. Or just sort of,
Yeah, because you're there like chopping vegetables and making yourself a meatloaf or something,
making myself a flambé. Really, when I say making dinner, I just mean using like the extra long, like the cocktail spoon to try to get the last of the peanut butter out of the bottom of the jar while standing over the sink and just scratching my sack. That's kind of what if we're going to traffic in honesty here, Don, it's
remind
not
Remind me never to have a peanut butter sandwich at your house.
Or to come anywhere near my home, ever. Especially because that window looks right out on the street. And I don't ever keep those blinds closed. No, sir. It's a little local color that I give the neighborhood. All right. Well, anyway, I really am just like that creepy Glenn kid from Mad Men, aren't I?
A little bit.
Yeah, the Emerson kid scratching his sack at the window again. Keep...
Oh, for the love of God, stop saying sack.
Put Trudy back in her room. In any event, I don't even know what I was saying. So this weekend was like laundry weekend. That's how exciting I am. So I was trying to get my laundry done. And so, I do it. My thing is I don't do it in waves. I wash it all, I dry it all, and then I fold it all at once in those three discrete steps. So I had
And then put it on your special shelves that you have for your special items.
That is exactly right.
They're all divided into their special sections.
I'm not the only one who does that. Everybody, you don't just stick your socks in with your shirts, right? I mean, you got a place where you put stuff.
You've talked about how you have like a special t-shirt closet. Or whatever
yes.
it is, yes.
And I have special sections within the closet for different types of t-shirts, mm-hmm. which I think I am probably not alone in doing. But it was a lot of goddamn clothing. I mean, it took me like 75 minutes to fold all of my clothes. But during that time, I just started watching Boardwalk Empire because you can sort of have it on, so I can be, have the clothes in front of me and the TV, my laptop behind me. And it's just exceptional. I mean, it really is, which I guess should go without saying. Yeah. Everybody, it's not like I didn't expect it to be, and I'm just saying what everybody else already knows, but
good. The first one was directed by Martin Scorsese, who's one of the executive producers, and I kept thinking, well, yeah, but that's the first episode.
That's the pilot.
It's not going to maintain that level of quality.
Tim Van Patten.
And it's actually gotten... more complex it's good.
It's just a beautifully shot show. The acting is exceptional.
And it's another one of those great shows like Deadwood that is actually based on reality. Nucky Thompson was a real guy.
I didn't know that until I saw that this weekend. Somebody told me that. And it's based on a book called Boardwalk Empire, which I now have to read. Which shouldn't surprise me, I guess, because that was the deal with like Goodfellas and Casino and whatever. And Scorsese's really drawn to like those sort of historical the big sort of sprawling period epics sometimes. The other thing that is so great about Boardwalk Empire, which takes place in Atlantic City in the 20s during Prohibition, the Volstead Act, is that, like Boogie Nights, it is really organically set in its time period, not in a gimmicky kind of way. When you watch Boogie Nights, like a lot of stuff set in the 70s. The 70s are the worst for this. It's a lot of like, look at our funny clothes and my wacky hair and da-da-da. Everything looks like you're watching that 80s show where the guy is going like, it's called a cellular telephone. And it's like a whole lot of like, look how period we are. This, you don't even notice really that it's set in the 20s. That's how organic it feels. It just is natural. It just flows. And everything just sort of fits perfectly. And it's really, really good.
Yeah.
So I watched that, and then and last night, following my leitmotif, where I just sort of postponed Dexter. I mean, it's sitting around. I'll watch it at some point, but there's no Mad Men, so I watched Boardwalk Empire, and then I watched Eastbound and Down, which was just every time I think that show, I'm just thinking, well, this is it. They can't possibly. There's never been a bad episode of that show, and I know that you're grading on a different curve because it's only like 6 or 7 episodes per season or whatever, but still. I there's a lot of shows that can't go 6 episodes in a row without sucking. Every time I think, they've exhausted everything they can. There's nothing the show can do to surprise me. They've wrung every bit of comedy out of this. Goddamn.
Caught up with the mysterious Eduardo Sanchez.
God, spoiler, lol, here for Eastbound and Down. So Kenny Powers meets up with his dad, Eduardo Sanchez, who is Don Johnson. And I mean, that was funny enough that it's like, hey, here's Don Johnson. Hey, it's his dad. Oh my God. And then that sequence, like right at the beginning of the show where they're talking back and forth and you realize they are both just so completely full of crap.
Yeah.
They are both just making stuff up. Well, I don't keep my boat and my plane here. I keep them in my grottos, son. And it's just two guys, both of whom are completely just full of crap and making up every single thing about their own lives. And it's spinning just one huge web of retarded deception at each other. And it's just,
it turns out his dad has this business taking people on ATV. Rides through Mexico. And so this sad, pathetic scene where Kenny's trying to bond with his dad going, well, you know, you have your love of ATVs and I have my love of jet skis, which are kind of the same, except they're on water. Well, no, actually, they're not. Can you take a jet ski up to the top of a mountain?
Well, you got me there.
Oh, God.
We'll have to take that trip someday. And that guy who plays Steve Janowski. When they're just sitting there in the jail cell, and he's just, and then they look over and he's just sitting there just pooping into the toilet, and it's just, and Kenny just, you know, just goes apoplectic at him, and that is really the great thing about their dynamic, is seeing how it always follows. It's that Kenny will freak out and lose his cool and scream at Stevie, who will then almost immediately find someone else to scream at, find someone else to yell at, I don't know. I just can't say enough about that show. It really is. It's just so well done. But I just felt like I was down the rabbit hole or something when he was talking to his dad, and you realize that they were just variations on a theme. Yeah.
It's always nice to see Don Johnson actually do it. I mean, he's not actually, you know, winking and nodding his way through this either. You know, he's playing the character. He's willing to play a complete loser.
Ugh.
And play it straight.
Goddamn. Mm. All right. The Rick Emerson Show brought to you today by The Cleaning Solution, 971-533-3211, 971-533-3211. I'm sorry, I interrupted you there.
You were about to say
something.
It's fine. This is important.
No, so it's we'll be talking more about that later on in the program.
Very important.
But 971-533-3211.
I can't say I had a huge weekend because, you know, I never have a huge weekend, but it was a good TV weekend. I watched, last night, for example, there was on the Discovery Channel, on LPB, they had back-to-back a brand new documentary on nature about crows who...
Are evil.
And as they were described, some scientists called them feathered apes. But anyway, they were talking. It was one of those things where they were showing how insanely intelligent crows are, and how they not only can use tools, but they can make tools to make other tools.
Oh, yeah.
To get food, you know, and that kind of
that
did was
they
awesome.
Show that thing where he bends the pipe cleaner into a hook to get the worm out of the jar or something.
They did some experiment. They were this one particular kind of jungle crow that's supposed to be the smartest of all the crows, and they did this experiment they'd never done before. These crows had figured out that if they had a stick inside a cage and they could reach that stick, then they could use that stick to get another stick that they could use to get the food. So they tried to take it a step further where they couldn't get the first stick out. But they had dangled a pencil from a string from a tree nearby. And the crow, first time, crow walking around, hopping around, looking at everything, cocking his head, thinking about it, goes up in the tree, winds the string up, pulls out the pencil, uses the pencil to get the first stick, then gets it to get the second stick, and then gets the berry. And you're just going, okay,
we're
crows
effed.
Are creepy.
We are so effed.
Then after that, the first episode of Sherlock, which I'd already seen. It's from Stephen Moffat, who did Doctor Who, the new Doctor Who's. It's so good. It is so
just Sherlock Holmes.
So good. Yeah, except it's Sherlock Holmes in the 21st century. And it's just, in a way, it's kind of meta. It's kind of like, you know, that the house and his friend Wilson in the show are based on Holmes and Watson. And I don't think you would have this new Sherlock if it wasn't for, say, House and the Sherlock Holmes movie with Robert Downey Jr. But it brings it all back around so that this is so, it's really sharp and really good and an amazingly good adaptation of Sherlock Holmes when you figure they're retelling these stories in a world with cell phones
and contemporary.
Actual modern forensics.
Are they using the original Holmes stories or are these new mysteries?
They are actually basing them on Conan Doyle stories and then adapting them in ways so that you have, you know, cell phones and things as actual clues. So really, really good. But then the highlight for me was I watched this episode of Law & Order SVU.
That's so sad that that was of all the things you just mentioned.
Well, you and I have talked about how much we love, like, John Munch.
Yes.
And Ice-T, that's right. And one of the things about the Law & Order series that is always entertaining in a really sad way is how they will use their story to, like, get on a soapbox about
right.
some almost completely irrelevant thing.
Right.
In this episode, the woman who was... Now, remember, this is Special Victims Unit, so it's a sex crime.
Right.
Except that the fact that she was raped when she was killed really has very little to do with the story. The story is really about the fact that she is a representative for a cola company who is buying up water rights. And that gave the Law & Order people an opportunity to talk about the evils of sugared soda.
And just have John Munch talking about aspartame or something?
Yes, if you will. And I brought some sound clips so that I could share with you a few of the highlights of...
Okay, because you said you were providing some sound and I wasn't quite sure about what you were speaking.
Yes.
This is the SVU cuts
yes,
right here?
Yes, indeed.
All right. So. Do you want to do those now?
Yeah, oh, please.
All right, okay.
Let's
hold on a second. Let me make sure that these are open. Okay, so this is Law & Order SVU.
And this will be Richard Belzer as John Munch, this first one.
All right, hold on a second. Let me just drop this. All right.
Enemies? Hell yeah. Soda used to mean fun, good times, America.
But now it means 300-pound kids getting winded walking up the school steps.
Yeah, people say we're as bad as cigarette companies. You don't see me out there forcing soda down kids' throats.
Big Tobacco said the same thing. Didn't work out too well in court, did it?
That's fantastic. And it's so great that they have Belzer doing it, too, because Munch, of course, is, Belzer himself and Munch are both conspiracy theorists.
Oh, yeah.
Richard Belzer has written several books about some of his sort of pet conspiracy theories. So this is perfect that they've got him doing it.
So now the second one is Ice-T.
Is that why you refused the $100,000 they offered your organization?
That was a bribe to silence us. We were about to pass a tax on soda when that Get Off the Couch campaign killed it. That was Lindsay Elding's brainchild.
Well, people should exercise more.
Of course. But she distracted everyone from the simple fact that soda's bad for kids.
That's fantastic. I like the idea that Ice-T is instructing us about our cardiovascular health and what we ought to do to improve same.
And he said it, like, so seriously, too. Just, and people should exercise more. So here's where you want to know about the real true dangers of soda. So here's where they talked to the mother of a young man who killed himself.
Davey was 12 when he took his life. I tried to make him stop with the cola, but he was addicted to it.
Soda made him kill himself.
I collected all the research. High fructose corn syrup can make you obese, and obesity can make you depressed.
Depression can lead to suicide. I'm just not sure that you can blame soda for what happened to your son.
That's what the jury said.
Jesus.
See, you cannot fault her train of logic.
No.
Soda makes you fat. Fat makes you sad. Sad makes you kill yourself.
That's fantastic. Well, you will never find a bigger fan than me of just the thinly veiled sort of ideological rant, just some sort of philosophical screed that is just, that has just the barest rudiments of story mm-hmm. in front of it, just to sort of, because otherwise it would just be, this is one of the reasons why I love, all of his early films, like all the early Spike Lee films, which are just an excuse for Spike Lee to just sit there and scream at you. I mean, that's all it is. It's just, it's just a reason for him to stand there and go, and another thing, Whitey, and then occasionally just cuffing you in the face, which is awesome. I'm all for that.
I have one more cut, and this was my next to Ice-T saying, well, people should exercise more. This was my favorite part because this is one of those great scenes where you have actors who. Unfortunately, you can't see them. The look in their eyes, that they are literally just reciting lines that they have been told to say, and they actually look a little bit like they hate themselves for doing it.
So. Well, I'm pissed the soda tax failed. Lindsay was behind that.
Who needs more taxes?
Taxes already go to soda. A $4 billion a year subsidy for corn syrup. That's why soda's so cheap.
A tax on sugar water would help pay for the cost of diabetes and heart disease.
Sugar water isn't the only cause for obesity. At least Lindsay was helping the little guy.
The little guy, brought to you by Cola Now. Ah, refreshing.
That's fantastic. That's wonderful. And this is sort of the lasting legacy. Not that he's the first one to do this, obviously, but this is one of the lasting legacies of Aaron Sorkin. You know, it'd be a 44-minute show, 29 minutes of which would just be like policy debate. Just people in a room talking about Medicare. Well done. I'm glad you brought that in. That put a smile on my face.
Oh, thank you.
You know, doesn't it sound a little bit like it's a kind of a PSA here at the beginning, too? Like it's a...
Well, I'm pissed the soda tax failed. Lindsay was behind that.
Who needs more taxes?
Taxes already go to soda. A $4 billion a year subsidy for corn syrup. That's why soda's so cheap.
A tax on sugar water would help pay for the cost of diabetes and heart disease.
This is one of those, like, this is iced tea for Measure 59.
And these are the kind of conversations, of course, that policemen have when they're sitting around trying to solve a rape murder.
Of course. Jesus. All right. In any event, it's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. Other stuff to get to, but we got to get to the news here. Mm-hmm. We'll do a couple stories. We'll have Aaron Duran join us here in just a few minutes for the Week in Geek coming up later on. Sarah X. Dillon and Greg Nibbler from Fun Employment Radio will be here as well. At the news desk, it is Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Since we spoke about this earlier, one Jennifer Johnson this week appeared to claim she suffered a high-def 3D divine intervention while her soldier husband Eric was away serving in Iraq. She said she was watching a pornographic movie with her friends when she became all dizzy. A month later, she realized she was pregnant and eventually became the proud mother of a dark-skinned boy. She says her 3D baby was very much like the porn star, the black porn star, in the movie.
From where did this story come?
Well, here's the thing.
Is this from a reputable news source?
This story was actually shared by a number of reputable news sources, including Gizmodo. Gizmodo doesn't have the story on their site anymore because it turned out it was fake.
Okay.
It was set up by a site called Sensacionalista. They were actually Mediaite was a site that set up the hoax. One site, Sensacionalista, actually grabbed a random image of a woman and a child from the internet to go with the story.
That seems like a bad idea.
And never identified that it was a file photo.
Okay.
Then they had to apologize to the woman and the child in the picture because she was identified, and she became the subject of ridicule in her hometown.
Yeah, I can see how that would happen.
So
it's just strange, but I mean, look, even in our retarded culture, doesn't it seem weird that news sites would just sort of grab that story in the first place and start running it?
Yeah, I know. I mean, even if you think it's kind of ridiculous, a site like Gizmodo,
yeah,
for example, should know better, and they should look into it a little bit to see where it comes from. If you go to the site Mediaite, Mediaite. .com, you can actually find there's a piece in there that talks about how Sensacionalista, this Brazilian newspaper, picked up the story and ended up. And of course, you know, not thinking it's the internet, and so.
Well, let's just use somebody's picture.
We'll just use somebody's picture. They'll never know.
6 billion people, who can find out? Yeah. Hey, by the way, speaking of Brazil, you know, the language there is Portuguese, not Spanish, Don. It is, however, a similar language to Spanish. It is a Latin tongue, all descended from a...
Sorry.
Now, see, that was just gratuitous right there. You sort of... your giggle. All descended from a common linguistic ancestor. And that is one of the reasons why Spanish becomes more and more prevalent every single day and will only become more so because it's... Well, first of all, because it's a relatively easy language to speak. Now, your comprehension obviously is going to take a while, but you can learn, as I've said before, you can learn to speak, to pronounce Spanish more or less correctly in like 5 minutes because language, you know, the languages like, you know, English, which is such a hodgepodge, you know, there's no internal consistency and, you know, we break our own rules all the time and there's other like weird idiomatic nonsense that make any sense. But if you are learning Spanish, you're going to find that it's a thing that it actually makes sense to your brain. It's a thing you can grasp very quickly, and there's no better place to do it than at Castalia Language Center. You can find out more about them at portlandspanish.com. That is portlandspanish.com. PortlandSpanish.com. They're a proud sponsor of the Rick Emerson Show, and you can find out more about them again at PortlandSpanish.com, where they offer Spanish language classes for adults with no more than seven other people to a class. Means they're going to get, you're going to get more individualized attention. A maximum of eight people, and they also work to find something that meshes with your schedule, with your, your needs. You got like your life, you got your job, you got a whole bunch of other obligations, responsibilities, and, diminishing time to do other things. So they're going to find something that works for you. That is Castalia Language Center at PortlandSpanish.com. Do tell them you heard it here, won't you please? That is Castalia Language Center at PortlandSpanish.com. Let's do one more, and then we'll be joined by Mr. Aaron Duran from Geek in the City for the week in Geek. Here's Don Taylor.
Well, let's do our Darwin Watch.
Here is your Darwin Watch for Monday, right here on the Rick Emerson Radio program.
I have a feeling some bad stuff is about to go down.
Don't! I ate all my caps.
Don't!
My parents won't let me use scissors.
Don't!
Another one bites the dust.
Don't!
Another one bites the dust. And another one gone, and another one gone. Another one bites the dust. Hey.
Oh, my heart just stopped. Ah, there it goes.
Here is your Darwin Watch for Monday.
A Southern California man was electrocuted and died as he and a female partner tried to steal copper wire from an electrical vault in Southgate on Saturday afternoon. The woman tried to pull him away from the vault when it caught fire and exploded, but the electricity traveled through her body and she received severe burns. She was taken to St. Francis Medical Center and transferred Saturday night to the Grossman Burn Centers. Two small children were found in a truck 15 feet from the accident, but were not injured. They were being held by children's services workers. The electrical vault was on a lot at the corner of Southgate Avenue and Firestone Boulevard. It was the former site of Liberty Cable Company, but has been unoccupied for more than a year. A police spokesman said the explosion at 4:14 p.m. knocked out power across the west side of Southgate, and that the power was largely restored by evening.
So he's basically he's a more advanced version, but ever so slightly advanced, of the squirrel that gets into the substation and just decides to gnaw through a large piece of cabling.
So a couple drive in a pickup truck with their two children to this abandoned power facility and then go in to steal copper wire.
Why not?
What could happen?
What could possibly go wrong? And the other thing about this is that you would figure that places like this would you would figure they would have better security, or they would have things in place to sort of keep people out. But maybe they figure that it's just sort of a self-regulating system.
Or that the power would be shut off.
Yeah.
Given that it's unoccupied.
I guess. Maybe they just figure that the idiot who tries to steal copper cabling or whatever isn't all that bright, and that's just a problem that sort of works itself out sort of naturally. Mm-hmm. And if people's lights are off for 30 minutes, then a small price to pay, I guess. There's your Darwin Watch for Monday in the Rick Emerson Show.
Another one bites the dust.
Don't.
Another one bites the dust. And another one gone. And another one gone. Another one bites the dust. Hey.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio program. It's 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964. Coming up later on, we have a job watch. Also, Sarah X. Dillon and Greg Nibbler from Fun Employment Radio will be here. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Radio program from geekinthecity.com with the Week in Geek, our good friend Mr. Aaron Duran. Hello, sir. How are you?
Hello. How are you all?
I am fantabulous. Hey, I have to ask you this. We opened the show today with that Dead Ale Wives sketch, which is a thing that Dawn hadn't actually heard before. They're like a Canadian comedy troupe or a comedy comedy gaggle of some sorts, right?
Yeah, and honestly, I don't even think they exist anymore because that clip's pushing about a decade old.
I think the actual record that it comes from is it's out of print. I don't think somebody said you can't actually get it anymore. It just sort of floats around on the internet. But I think the first time you sent it to me, it was actually like the YouTube clip of all of the monsters sitting around the table gaming themselves.
Yeah, totally.
It was fantastic.
Yeah, I think it was from they took all the, I think because it was that game company, I forgot what game it was now. But they put that clip as an Easter egg inside their game, and if you kind of hacked into something from the game, you got that little scene.
Yeah, it really is. It really is fantastic.
To this day, if there's people gaming, you'll hear in the background, "We're not a cheater."
If there's any girls, I want to do them.
I want to do.
Actually,
I get drunk.
Actually, Dan Harmon, who's the head writer and creator of Community, was a member of Dead Alewives.
And it's
Community is hilarious.
And let's also try not to be make too many comments about how much your voice really, really, really was a dead ringer for like any one of those guys just now. Almost as if you'd had an entire lifetime of practice doing that, Aaron.
almost as if I've lived that grand adventure.
Before we do anything else, we should mention that coming up after today's program, following today's Rick Emerson Show and following the Rick Emerson Show every day this week, and we're going to have an episode of AZ, which is the ongoing zombie-based radio drama, which aired a couple years back right here in the fine city of Portland, Oregon. And because of Halloween, we're going to be airing one episode every day all this week following the Rick Emerson Show right here at rickemerson.com. And then Sunday, we'll do a back-to-back marathon of the entire series, AZ, the complete series, along with an interview with Aaron Duran and Jason Crump. You guys were the creators of this, and so we're going to actually tape that interview with you guys tonight at 7 o'clock Pacific, and we'll broadcast it live. So if anybody wants to tune in and actually hear the interview happening live, you can do that, and then we're going to play it back throughout the weekend on Sunday as well. So that is coming up this Sunday. What else is happening in the world of geekery, my friend?
Oh man, especially in this time, like, what isn't happening this weekend? October is a busy month in Portland to begin with, but you've got Halloween weekend and, you know, all the crazy and insane gets to go out and have fun. I'm trying to think here. Saturday, actually, first off, tomorrow night, you're going to want to hit the Hollywood Theater because Dan Halford of the Grindhouse Film Festival is doing another one of his Grindhouse double features. It's a Fulci double feature. So at 7:30 at the Hollywood Theater, he is showing The House by the Cemetery, which is all about this professor and his creepy son buying a cursed old house, and they have to start killing and potentially even maiming each other to then survive. And then at 9:30, he is showing another screening of Lucio Fulci's classic Zombie, which has the legendary zombie versus shark scene.
Now, is Zombie the one? Now, I remember. Is Zombie the one that has the sequence with the thing going into the eye? Is that the same movie?
Yeah, that would be the painfully slow wood chip in the eye gouge.
Yeah, have you seen that? Have you seen Zombie?
Yes,
that's awesome. It's just a sequence of like a long splintery, I don't even know what you call it, but basically like a large shard off a wooden door that just goes right into somebody's eye. But what makes it so great and terrible is that it takes like 45 seconds for it to happen. It just sort of comes incrementally closer. I saw that, in fact, the last time he showed Zombie at the Hollywood Theater, Laura and I went to see it. And, I mean, it was just like an entire audience of people just climbing the freaking walls. It was like the adrenaline shot sequence in Pulp Fiction, where by the time that sequence was over, everybody was just exhausted. We were just so spent with just stress and anxiety. So that's great. And then, there's the sequence where he's fighting the shark, which is, I mean, that's worth your price of admission right there, Zombie versus shark.
And that is a real shark and a real diver. The story goes that they drugged the shark so that it wouldn't maim the diver.
Fantastic.
I love that scene. And then the other thing going on is Saturday night at the Crystal Ballroom. It is the 10th annual Halloween Erotic Ball, which really the title kind of says exactly what happens at the Erotic Ball.
Dawn might want to be listening up because apparently Dawn's sex drive is actually amplified to the point that it can't be satiated by any means. At this point, it's just it's become.
Oh, well, then we should be there. There'll be accoutrements and latex for enough for everyone at the Erotic Ball this Saturday at the
It's become some sort of a many-headed hell beast of carnality that cannot be satisfied.
And you know how I love accoutrements.
Well, everybody does.
Yeah.
I should also mention coming up this Friday at the Baghdad, Things from Another World is going to be presenting the Blood and Guts Bash, which is a festival of animated manga, of Japanese animation, based on two popular manga titles, one called Helsing and one called Gantz.
Helsing and Gantz. I think you guys are showing the extra bloody episodes of those two,
which are fantastic, by the way. I'm reading Helsing as we speak, and so one deals with a secret organization, that battles creatures of the night and the undead, and the other actually. The other deals with a group that that recruits the recently dead, not the undead, but just the recently dead, the recently normally dead, to fight aliens. And they're both just incredibly cool and incredibly violent. And that's going to be happening this coming Friday from 9 to midnight at the Baghdad, the Blood and Guts Bash, brought to you by Things from Another World. All of which leads up to then Halloween Sunday, where the Walking Dead premiere is going to be happening at the Baghdad. So it really, there's going to be no sleep for anybody starting like now.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, like I said, yeah, this Sunday it's the Walking Dead at the Baghdad. I suggest try to cram them both. I don't know how, because the other thing happening Sunday is the Dearly Departed tour at the Lone Fir Cemetery. So it's just kind of one of those things, like you kind of you know, pick what you want to, you know, what your night's got to be. Both are going to be just righteous nights that you are going to want to take a look at.
I will say the thing about the Dearly Departed tour is that you I mean, that's a thing where you got to get there like 3-4 hours early sometimes, depending on you know, if it's, especially when it's Halloween. I think it's going on earlier in the weekend as well. I'm not entirely sure about that, but if anybody has not taken the Dearly Departed tour at the Lone Fir Cemetery, they really owe it to themselves to do so. It is a fantastic.
What you should do is, if you're someone who's taken the Dearly Departed tour, you can be the line holder at the Walking Dead, and then you send your friends to the Lone Fir Cemetery, take the tour, and then they haul butt back to the Baghdad.
Exactly.
So, Aaron, what are you dressing as for Halloween this year?
I'm trying to go with MODOK.
Okay.
MODOK is a giant floating head villain from Marvel Comics. He's just a giant head with a rocket where his butt should be, and tiny little hands and feet, and
his butt should be. It's hard to believe that sometimes comics aren't taken seriously as an art form. He's got a rocket ass, basically. It's awesome.
And tiny hands. Tiny hands and a rocket butt.
Just go Google MODOK and you will see the genius of that character.
Okay.
Just a giant floating head with a chair that shoots brain lasers. So anyways, I think I'm just going to wear a black cloak to cover my body and then just turn my head into a flying MODOK with little stubby hands coming out of the side.
There are times that I understand almost nothing that is being said here. All right, Aaron Duran and Jason Crump will be a guest in the studio tonight at 7 p.m. That is tonight, October 25th, 7 p.m. for a live broadcast of the interview about AZ, which will then be played back as an accompaniment to the episodes this week. So an episode of AZ immediately following today's Rick Emerson program, and a new episode every day all the way through Sunday, when we'll be doing an encore, or rather a marathon of all of the AZ episodes back to back, marathon style. So, all right, Aaron Duran of geekinthecity.com with The Week in Geek. We will talk to you tonight, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Aaron Rocket Ass Duran. The thing is, I could see the sort of layers of reaction on your face as you asked him what he was going to be for Halloween, and then he started to explain it. And it was like, first was sort of like you were kind of furrowing your brow, like you were trying to understand, like you were trying to make sense of it. And then it was just a realization you were never going to make sense of it. And then it was just an acknowledgement that it was just fundamentally ridiculous.
Yeah.
All right, Stu, one more here. We will take a break. We'll come back after this. Sarah X. Dillon, Greg Nibbler are going to be in the studio with us later on. Also, Job Watch and more. This is Don Taylor.
Police in Winnipeg warned residents to lock themselves in their homes on Sunday as they searched for a man who shot dead 2 people and injured a third in a shooting spree. Local media reported the suspect was believed to have shot at his victims from a bicycle using a sawed-off shotgun. Police spokesman Jason Mickelson told the Winnipeg Free Press that citizens should not open their doors to unexpected visitors. It seems to be random shootings in the North End, he told reporters. We don't know where this individual is at this point. This is a very serious incident. It is unique and very unfortunate. One witness told the paper the shooter, who was on a bicycle with a sawed-off shotgun, was dressed as a ninja.
Okay. Where did this take place?
Winnipeg, Canada.
You don't really think of the Canadians as being a ninja dressing, shotgun wielding, bicycle pedaling kind of people.
No, you don't.
That seems that's a confluence of a lot of things that don't go together. This maybe you said this and I missed it. Now, what kind of, was there a death here? Was there?
Yeah. He killed 2 people and injured a third.
Okay, I mean, how would you even? I'm presuming that maybe he bicycled up and then stopped and maybe sort of parked the bike.
What is a sawed-off shotgun? So maybe you could do it with one hand.
No, there's no doing that. See, there's not even.
No, I guess not. No,
because that's the thing about the sawed-off shotgun is, and not like I know a lot about guns, but I know that the deal is that the shorter the barrel, the more it kicks.
I will say I was driving home from the studio on Friday, and I was in traffic over here on off a division behind a hippie on a bicycle who was doing some kind of interpretive dance with his arms while he was pedaling. Yeah, so his hands were not on the handlebars. He was just doing some kind of it was like he was practicing his disco hippie dance moves. It was very strange. I bet that guy could fire a shotgun while riding a bike.
I saw this just on Friday. Have you ever seen the people who are bicycling along while they are actually holding the cell phone to their head, or even worse, they're doing the thing that we've already noted is really difficult, where they're tilting their head to the left to just try to wedge the cell phone between like their cheek and their shoulder.
You can't do that.
And then they're bicycling as well. And it was like somebody in a helmet, which makes even less sense because they're presumably concerned with safety.
The trend that I find the most just inexplicably like rage-inducing, like I should just probably just find it annoying or just go, oh, Portland, but instead it actually fills me with rage, are the guys on those like giant super high bicycles that they've made that are like super tall.
Yeah.
Because there's no good reason for it other than to show off and go, look, I've got a big tall bicycle. And the thing is, at any moment they could just like fall over into traffic and get run over by a car, and then they're going to complain that, like, you know, it's another accident because people in cars don't look out for bicyclists.
There's the I was going to say there's a thing on Outlook Portland, as you know, but you probably haven't seen this because you're probably not an early riser.
6:30 in the morning on Sunday? Hell no.
Well, it's available online, but I would imagine that you also you get a lot of high dosage ultra concentrated distilled Rick, like kind of every day.
I do.
So you probably don't decide to seek out more of me online.
I get more Rick than most people.
There, it's true. That really doesn't mean anything. But it's like, it was just sitting there. How could I not? I mean,
no.
It was just, you know.
You should have done finger pistols with that, too.
Hey, now. But there's this feature that we have on Outlook Portland, which is called which I think predates or postdates your last appearance in Outlook Portland. Last time you were on was with Mike Russell, and I think we were not doing this at that point. But we have this feature called the editorial reply.
I've seen a couple of those. Yes.
Where it's just like Godzilla or Megatron or some other character from sci-fi or fantasy or comics or whatever, talking about some issue facing us, you know, an issue of great societal and political import. And one of the recent editorial replies, if I can find the audio at some point, I'll play it for you just because it's hilarious. And I don't just say that because it's like it's a thing I did and so therefore it's funny. It's just because things are funnier, first of all, when they're said by Megatron or like an inert plastic statue of a lizard. But I think it was Megatron who had this editorial about tall bikers, and here's just a little look behind the curtain. Is that I've decided that some of the characters have, like, in my world, they have specific interests or peeves or tics. So for example, there's this guy, Thornscape Battle Mage, who's an elf. He's an elf wizard, in Magic the Gathering. And so I've decided that his whole thing is traffic. He's really irritated about traffic all the time.
Of course.
And then I've given Godzilla sort of a what do you want from my life? Kind of a delivery. But Megatron, his whole thing, it's much simpler. He just ends all of his editorials with, I will destroy you! No matter what he's talking about, and so
well, he is Megatron. It's kind of his thing.
I decided it was perfect to use him to talk about the tall biker. So I'll see if I can dig up the audio for that. Just final observation that I'm going to make, just because we're talking about all things geeky right here. It's never too early to be promoting this. This coming Sunday, actually, in Outlook Portland is when I do that. It's the show with Katherine Schwarzenegger.
Ooh,
yes. which is quite something. She is not only quite a looker, as I mentioned, but she's it's a really interesting interview. It is not quite what I expected it to be. Also, I have to say, there's perhaps one of the finest Megatron editorials, like, yet committed to film. So you really need to be watching that. It is 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964. Don't forget, immediately following today's program, we'll have an installment of AZ, doing one of those episodes every day following the Rick Emerson Show, a different episode of AZ, the ongoing zombie-based Portland radio drama. So again, not the right order for those words, but you just put it all together in your head. It'll make sense. We're doing one episode every day leading up to Sunday. We do a back-to-back marathon of the entire series, as well as an interview with Aaron Duran and Jason Crump. That is all on the way. You're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Well, all right then. We mentioned this. Did I tell you that dog sitting place you can take your dogs to where you look at them online, where there's like a webcam
that you can
sort of follow them around?
Mm-hmm.
All right. I'm thinking about installing the webcam at my house that's just like a Philo cam. I have a wireless one, and I'm thinking about maybe attaching it to his collar, just so we can see what he's running away from, or you know, what is terrifying him at any given moment. I have no real reason to mention this. I mean, we're talking about the cleaning solution here in just a moment. But I was thinking about the dogs and how Max is always that whole question of like, how does he get the 10-pound pizza off the shelf that's like 15 yeah. feet off the ground? And that all went into my head, and I was thinking about putting up a Max cam or a Philo cam so I could observe the dogs. That then leads me to this thought. I don't think I ever mentioned this. I had this whole thing I was going to do this year. This is one of our many plans that was thwarted. It was a thing that I intended to do on this show, and then we weren't able to do it because the weather was wrong. Did I ever tell you about my plan to do the mantis cam?
No.
See, here's the thing. You can actually buy one of our longtime sponsors when we were doing the terrestrial version of the show was Everybody's Garden Center. You go there, and you can actually buy a praying mantis. It's like a – it's not really an egg, like – sack. It's like a walnut. It's very hard. It's like feels woody almost. But that is the thing that praying manti put their eggs inside. And it's like 250 baby praying mantises inside.
Okay.
And the deal is you just set it outside in the, you know, in the sun or in a warm place. And then at some point, 200 praying mantises just come out. So I had this whole thing of just hooking up a camera on it and having like the Rick Emerson mantis cam. Edged all the time on the website. But the weather, though, never... Every time I would ask him about it, they would just say that it wasn't warm enough. And so now that the, you know...
Now it's definitely not warm
enough. Well, no, I mean, Christ, you look outside and it's just, I mean... It's not miserable as such because I kind of enjoy it when it's overcast and gray and whatever, but I'm just saying it's like we did kind of get horked out of our summer, you know, for good or bad. Summer didn't really ever arrive.
I was perfectly happy with that.
I'm not saying it was a bad thing. I'm just saying mantis cam. It would have been awesome.
I had a boyfriend who had a praying mantis in a terrarium. And, man, they are scary creatures. They are the closest thing to what I imagined an actual alien would be like.
Yeah, well, they do have that kind of queen mother from Aliens sort of a thing going on.
And they just look really, they're not smart because they're insects, but they look really smart. And then they actually, like, can manipulate things as if they have hands.
Yeah.
And they're really disturbing. Like, I would always watch it and just kind of have that weird thing of like, man, if you were 7 feet tall, I would just be crapping myself and dying right now.
Here's the thing about praying mantises. And I say manti because it sounds correct, but it can't possibly be correct. That's got to be wrong.
It's mantooth.
The thing that makes them creepy, I've deduced this because I've thought about this before, about why are they so freaking weird looking. The thing about the praying mantis that makes it so creepy is that they stand upright. That's the thing. You know, I mean, I'm not saying they're normal looking. I mean, they're weird looking regardless.
And but the head cock. It's kind of like with crows. When you're watching crows think about things and try to figure things out, it's that head cock that makes them look like they're actually pondering.
But see, don't you think that's exacerbated by the fact that they're basically standing up on two legs?
That too, yeah. And then they look like they have arms.
Yeah.
And hands.
And the standing thing makes it look like you are seeing the this has nothing to do with Michael Beatty and the cleaning solution. But you know what? This is the sort of structureless musing that many of our business partners find so endearing and charming about the Rick Emerson Show. The standing upright thing makes it seem like you are seeing the praying mantis at some intermediate stage of their evolution. That's the thing about it. Is it like, well, once upon a time they were all bent over and they crawled on all fours, you know, or they were slug-like or whatever. And then in the future, they're basically should be walking around in suits clutching a briefcase, like trying to get to the automat or whatever. But now... You're seeing like the middle ground, the interstitial stages. That's what kind of, you know, because evolution is an ongoing process and so forth. It's like every now and again, like I was sitting in the chair last night at home typing away. Philo has this, it's one of the toys that our listener Laura brought in. And so Philo does this thing where he comes in and he gives me the toy and I throw it and he brings it back and, you know, we play fetch for, you know, and then I'd say, okay, daddy got to work, leave. And so he comes back in and he just stares at me with the toy in his mouth, you know, just looking at me, wanting me to take the toy and throw it, and I ignore him. I just say, you know, not now, I'm busy. And I start typing, and he'll do this thing of just picking up his leg and just tapping me on the knee with one of his paws.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, I mean, I'm not saying it's like he's doing Morse code or something, but that's a little weird, don't you think?
That's something that dogs do when they're spoiled, Rick. When dogs are a little bit spoiled.
I'm just saying, well, there's nobody more spoiled than Max, and he doesn't. Like, I've never had a dog do that before.
Really?
I have never had a dog tap me like you would tap somebody on the shoulder.
No, I've known dogs that have done that.
It's freaking weird. To me, that is like a little bit of evolution in action, because that is the thing that I equate with humans. Mm-hmm. I don't equate that with, you know, just being a learned behavior in some form of animal.
Well,
that is a human behavior.
Dogs do learn very quickly, though, and the thing they learn is they learn from getting a positive reinforcement for what it is that they do. So the thing is, he wants your attention. And so the very first time he tried that and it worked and you looked at him, his brain went, aha! And so now he has learned that he can get your attention by tapping you.
So it's my fault.
Pretty much, because it sounds like you haven't really been discouraging it.
So I should have just tased him the first time. Hey, if I could...
There you go.
All right.
Firm hand, Rick. Firm hand.
This observation about nothing having to do with cleaning, I mean, except in the sense that, the dogs are probably at home right now destroying something valuable.
I thought you were going... It looked for a second like you were heading in a direction about, like, the whole evolution thing. And that, like, the evolution of your carpet getting dirty over a period of time.
No.
I actually thought that's where you were headed.
I was headed nowhere.
Oh, all right.
There was... No, you were misinformed. Yeah, you misapprehended exactly my intentions there. The cleaning solution can take care of damage caused by your pets, though. Wily... The pets at that, wily and cunning and crafty, and able to scale things that really, ought to not be scalable, in my assessment. 971-533-3211, 971-533-3211, and as we do head into autumn here, and as the rain just sort of turns everything outside into a thick sort of pasty sludge, you're going to be tracking it in your feet, and you're going to be stamping your feet on the front of the welcome mat, which means that it's going to get, it is going to get wet and muddy itself. It's not going to clean your shoes sufficiently, and maybe it doesn't happen over one day or one week, but you're going to look down, you're going to realize the carpet, the linoleum, tile, whatever has just gotten all grungy and needs to be taken care of. So contact Michael Beatty, 971-533-3211, The Cleaning Solution, 971-533-3211, that is The Cleaning Solution. Tell me you heard it here on the Emerson News Network, won't you please?
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Emerson Show. Hey, I feel like I ought to be smashing crockery or something like this.
I love Go 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 Mellow.
This is I played this for you because Because you did or did not see these guys when they were here last week?
I didn't. I wanted to, but
failed.
I didn't. I know.
Was it because, this is not Rick Emerson's assessment, by the way. Was this because you said going to the Roseland, you always felt like you were going to, quote, die in a fire?
Well, the...
And not in the internet way?
It never really occurred to me until I saw the Jim Rose Circus at the Roseland. And I was up in the balcony. And the balcony at the Roseland, it's like there's one rickety set of stairs up to the balcony, and then you go all the way down to the ends. And I was watching them like eat fire down on the stage at the Roseland, and thinking to myself, man, if there was a fire in this place, we would all die.
You'd be hosed.
That place is such a death trap.
Yeah.
And so for some reason now, every time I think, I go, oh, it's at the Roseland. Because I just have this image in my head of there eventually being some kind of horrible tragedy there. Although, there hasn't been so far. So.
No, but I mean, I suppose you could take that as an argument that we're due.
Yeah.
I guess I can tell this story now. I'll just be real brief about this. Sarah X. Dill and Greg Nibbler are going to join us here in just a few. Don't forget, coming up immediately following today's program, we'll have an episode of AZ, the ongoing zombie-based radio drama set right here in Portland that was aired originally a couple years ago. We're going to be doing one episode every day. And then on Sunday, we're going to be doing a back-to-back marathon of the entire series. Tonight at 7 p.m., we'll also be airing a live interview with Aaron Duran and Jason Crump, who are the creators of AZ, and then we'll play that back on Sunday as well. This is a thing I can do. Now it can be told.
Can I throw something out here really quick before you tell the
yes.
story? The zombie versus shark clip from Fulci's Zombies 2 is on the Rick Emerson Show Facebook
awesome.
Site. So if you want to know what Aaron was talking about a zombie fighting a shark, go to the Rick Emerson Show Facebook page.
I'm telling you, you really can't overstate the greatness of the spike in the eye scene, though. You know, there's something about a big splinter, like a just a tight rack shot of it. I'm just saying,
yeah.
It's it takes like 70 seconds for the whole scene to play. It's awesome. What was I saying? So you've talked about dying in a fire at the Roseland, which, but again, mm-hmm. hasn't happened. We're not saying that that's the sort of thing that would take place. But some years ago, I guess this would have been maybe 2006, I think, because I think it was when we first were on CBS. We did a listener event at what was then Sabala's Mount Tabor, which I think is just now Mount Tabor. Then it was Mount Tabor Legacy. I don't even know what it's called now. It's gone through like three owners since then. But it was Sabala's Mount Tabor, which I think you might have been in attendance at that. I think that might have been the first time that we met, actually. Did you say you were at that?
Yeah.
At 2006 at Sabala's?
Yeah. I was at that
and it was when Storm and Jarrah sang the Lita Ford Ozzy Osbourne song.
Well, we had met previous to that because the first time we met was when I interviewed you for the Tribune story. But as part of the Tribune story, I went to the listener party.
At this party, though, I just remember this must have been maybe 2 hours into the event or something, where somebody just pulled me aside. It was like somebody was sort of loosely affiliated with the show or maybe who worked there. I forget exactly who it was, but it said, okay, so there's a lot of smoke coming out of one of these back rooms. So, can you come help us put out what might be a fire? And I don't think I've ever actually said this. I don't think I said it on the air because they were, it seemed like I probably didn't want to announce that we'd exposed people to the possibility of dying consumed by flame. So I went around to the side there at Sabala's, and for reasons that I don't think were ever really explained to me, there was, in fact, just smoke pouring out of one of the back rooms, because there was the stage and a little division wall and then a little downstairs where there was a billiard area, and then it was basically the door that led to the backstage. And there was just, I mean, I'm amazed that no one else noticed it. I mean, it must have been because that place smelled so bad to begin with, and everybody was just so sweaty and drunk and distracted and whatever. But there was just this coming out of the back, and I sort of started to go back there, and I thought, well, wait a minute. I don't really want to be going into like a backstage, small, cramped area from which there is only one door that you can leave while smoke is pouring out of it. And I don't really know what's back there.
Yeah.
So I thought, I'm going to let other people handle this. So I just sort of stepped back and I stood there for a couple minutes wondering if I should tell everybody or if I should. And it's that whole thing of like, do you really want to be the guy literally shouting fire in like a crowded venue? And I thought, no. I'm not going to be, and I just made the decision. I'm like, if anything goes badly, I'm just going to deny that anybody told me there was smoke. Is it true that you knew there was a fire? It is not true. At no point, I would have told people. Come on. And so I sat there. There was the most surreal moment at that gig. I don't think I've ever mentioned this. So the band is playing, and Sarah got on stage and was doing some announcement, sort of like, hey, thanks for coming out, blah, blah, blah. And then meanwhile, I'm just seeing a lot of guys run back and forth from this room to the bar with like wet towels and pitchers of water. And just coming back looking all bedraggled. And then eventually the smoke just stopped coming out. And I have no idea to this day. I don't know what was going on back there, what was on fire, how close we all came to dying. So when you say that you're unnerved by going to the Roseland because you think you might just end up flambéed, yeah, it's not like that's outside the realm of possibility.
Also, I just don't ever go anywhere or do anything. Although I did this weekend.
You.
I did go somewhere this weekend, which was a big deal for me because I don't ever go. I was having brunch with a friend of mine, and I said, I'm going to go someplace I want to go that I've never been before, which you are one of the few people I know that will really truly understand this. I get anxious if I am going to like a restaurant I have never been before.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm with you on that.
It's just, I don't know what I think is going to happen, but there's this part of me that just thinks that something will go wrong. I won't be dressed properly. People will be mean to me for no good reason. Yeah, I don't know. It's like I've never been there. I don't know what'll happen. And so, there are times when I just go, I have to get over this because, you know, I have to try new things. So I suggested this place I wanted to go. We went to Simpatica Dining Hall on Ash, Southeast Ash between, Southeast Ash between 8th and 9th. It's run by the Simpatica Catering Company, which is part of the Laurelhurst Meat Market and Butcher Shop. So they do all this fancy meats and things like that. They have a catering company. They do like one, I think, prefix dinner a week where you just like you go at 7 o'clock and everybody sits at these long tables and there's one seating and you eat this like super fancy food. But they do brunch every Sunday and there are no reservations and you just go. And we went and we waited around for a while. And luckily we got there early because when we left, there were like 30 people in line behind us waiting for tables. But I had the best bacon I have ever eaten in my whole life.
That's a bold statement.
I know it is. And it sounds like hyperbole, but it is not. It's because the Laurelhurst Butcher Shop, they do like all of the meat comes from like local farms and they get stuff from places like this one farm called Tails and Trotters where they feed their pigs like hazelnuts and everything just like super good. And they cure their own bacon. They make their own corned beef and all that stuff. And I got this Belgian waffle, which were like three perfect squares of Belgian waffle with this plum syrup compote stuff on it and a big dollop of soft whipped cream and two enormous slices of their own house cured bacon. And I took a bite of this bacon and
she started to cry.
It was like a revelation. I mean, I love like all right thinking people, I love bacon. But this bacon, honest to God, this was the kind of bacon that makes you think you have never truly tasted bacon before. It's indescribable.
Was it a thick bacon?
It was a thick bacon. The strips were about like so long and so wide. It was two slices of bacon, but they were huge slices of bacon. And it was like, I don't know how to explain it because it tasted like bacon, but there was a richness and a depth to the flavor. And then the fat portion of the bacon just like melted on the tongue.
All right, we're going to pass a new rule.
It was unbelievable.
We're going to have like a swearing jar, and but it's going to be a food jar. And whenever somebody, you or Kelly Clark or whoever, is anybody telling some damn story about something that I can't have right now because I'm busy listening to you tell the story about the thing I can't have, you got to put like a buck in the jar. And then all of that money will be used to purchase something delightful for us to consume here.
Okay.
Because now I'm just sitting here and thinking about bacon, and thinking about so now I'm just thinking, this is the sort of topic that we will not spend a lot of time on this because it's like it's almost a parody of a niche discussion topic. But, you know, the best bacon you've ever had. But I remember, though, the first time that I had something that wasn't just like trashy, like $1.99 in a package at Safeway bacon, which is all I had growing up, you know, really.
Yeah.
But the first time somebody said, you know, do you want some? Well, we could get some Applewood bacon. And I said, what's that? And it was just it. And it was the same thing of like, you know, they bring it out of the oven or whatever, where it's been crisped on like foil or something. And you have it. You just say like, what is this you've given me? It tastes like gold, but made of meat. And it's just fantastic on like every level.
Yeah, I took a bite of this bacon and my eyes, I could feel my eyes get huge. And I ripped off a piece of it and I just handed it to my friend. And I was like, eat this bacon. And he put the bacon in his mouth and he just went, oh, my God. We're both just sitting there going, dear Lord. And I've heard wonderful things. I've never actually had any of the meats from Laurelhurst Butcher Shop. I've heard great things about them. I understand that you can get sandwiches there with the meats that they make themselves, and they're awesome. But honest to God, this was like simpatica. I don't want to recommend this to too many people because it's already like really super crowded and you have to wait in line for a long time. But just unbelievable. And honest to God, because it's brunch, reasonably priced. If everything is between like $10 and $12, they have chicken fried bison.
Okay, you have to stop. Seriously, you have to.
Chicken fried bison.
I'm gonna have to come over there and just beat your ass because seriously, I can't hear anymore. Because now I'm just going through like a laundry list in my head of things that I wish I could be eating at this moment. Not including, but not limited to that. That's it. This is the last thing I'll say about that sandwich. What's that place on Hawthorne just done nothing but waffles? You know, is it the Waffle Window or whatever?
Yeah.
You know, it's like an adjunct to Bread and Ink Cafe, I think, okay, or something. Yeah. And they have this, but they have this
not
waffle
Parker's.
That's...
Parker's was over on...
I think it actually is just called the Waffle Window.
Okay.
But they have this waffle that's, it's like bacon and basil and brie and, you know, and something on a waffle. And then right next to that... is their parent restaurant, which serves this sandwich, which is a grilled flatbread with brie and slices of green apple and applewood bacon that's all pressed together, and then
good.
More cheese and then pressed again. So now it's the whole thing.
That was Simpatica Dining Hall is my guess. I highly recommend
you.
It.
Hello. Hi, Rick Emerson radio program. Who might this be?
Hello, Rick and Don. It's Andy.
Hello, Andy. How are you on this fine Monday, sir?
A little bit of the illness and stuffy nose, but other than that, I am fantastic.
Excellent. How can I service you, the listener?
Since you're discussing bacon and everything, I thought I would float an idea I had a while back that I figured if anybody would be able to give a good opinion on this idea, it would be you, Rick Emerson, the connoisseur of bacon.
Let me just ask you this: Are you in bed with your phone or something? Or are you where are you right now?
I'm in my room with my laptop.
Are there
laptop
girls there? I'm sorry.
No. Please, I'm a nerd. I never have girls.
Okay. All right. So what is your bacon idea, sir?
I considered what would happen if you were to rub the bacon with brown sugar before you cooked it.
Dawn's eyes just lit up like she was filled with 1,000-watt candles.
It's excellent. I've done it. In fact, I gave some to Rick.
Yes.
Remember that candied bacon I made for you?
It was quite good. No, I was a fan. That actually sounded...
Yeah, the brown sugar caramelizes on the bacon, and it actually... And then when the bacon starts to cool a little bit, it kind of crisps up, and you get candied bacon, and it's delicious.
Excellent. The other thing I wanted to kind of... Float out there was, besides, you know, the standard bacon and eggs, what is, like, not as part of a sandwich, but what, as a side, what does bacon go best with, in your opinion?
What is whirring in the background there? Are you osterizing something while we speak? What's happening in the background of the phone?
As far as I can tell, nothing. It could be my computer.
All right, just...
My computer is, like this really cheap... computer that I've had for years. Uh-huh. It does stuff without me knowing why all the time.
Don, before we wrap this up, what is his question was the perfect accompaniment food to bacon, the perfect side dish.
I am a purist. I do enjoy like pancakes with bacon. I like something kind of starchy and sweet with my bacon to offset it, like a waffle or a pancake or a bowl of oatmeal. I enjoy something that's got kind of some sweetness on the side to the bacon. You, Rick Emerson?
You know, I one of the things I just had for the first time actually was okay. We're gonna let you go, Andy. Thank you. There you go. That's Andy who's apparently dying on the other end of the phone. A thing that I had resisted for the longest time, which was a pancake with bacon in it, you know, sort of like layered. I think it was actually sort of two very, very thin pancakes with bacon in between them, which the thing I didn't like is the whole sweet and salty thing, which I do sort of like in general, but that I just resisted. It seemed like it couldn't possibly be good, and then it was. So that is my most that's my most recent bacon discovery. At the news desk, ladies and gentlefolk, this is Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
your wallet may be a little lighter than usual after you fill up your gas tank. The national average for a gallon of regular is up 5 cents to $2.82 a gallon.
Who has more to say about that, Don?
That would be Trilby Lundberg of the Lundberg Survey.
Awesome.
Who tells us where the cheapest and most expensive gas is.
In the lower 48 states, we have St. Louis at the low, $2.59, and at the high end, we have San Francisco, $3.16.
Lundberg explains what could impact prices in the coming weeks.
It will depend more on monetary policy, one thinks, rather than supply and demand, because the supply is flush for crude oil and for products, and demand is weak also for both.
Do you suppose that the Lundberg Institute does other things, or is this like what she does with her day? Is this the totality? Is this the sum of Trilby Lundberg's existence?
Just put together her soundbite about gas prices?
That's it. It just sits and tries to figure out what a barrel of light, sweet crude is going to be, and then she just goes off to have to do some shopping?
There's got
to
be something else.
You would think, but I mean, who knows? I mean, you know, America's all about finding what you do and doing it well. All right.
I got the story here. Let's do this story as a Geek Watch.
All right, here's your Geek Watch for Monday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
Ugh, this high-speed modem is intolerably slow.
In the Quasar Dilemma, remember, you used to...
Just a television show. That's all, okay?
Right, but... Because we were wondering if the quantum flux... Now, just listen on
there. There is no quantum flux. There's no auxiliary. There's no goddamn ship. You got it?
Energize.
Here is Don Taylor with your Geek Watch.
Thousands of costumed New Zealanders hit the streets today to protest rumors that Peter Jackson might film his Lord of the Rings Hobbit movie elsewhere. Donning New Zealand is Middle Earth and We Love Hobbits signs, protesters rallied in cities across the country to make sure the shoot goes ahead in New Zealand this February, as initially planned. The trouble began after a labor dispute erupted between Jackson and local unions earlier this year, spooking producers and reportedly prompting them to start looking around for alternatives. While New Zealand Prime Minister John Key personally agreed to meet with Warner Brothers executives this week to discuss the issue, he warned that there's only a 50-50 chance that the Hobbit shoot will go forward as planned.
Here's the thing. Here's why I don't believe this. Because everything they've said about the Hobbit film, like, it's all been lies. Like, every single step of the way, they've did, if not lies, everything they've said has just turned out to be inadvertently maybe untrue.
Yeah.
Where they said, well, we're not going to do a Hobbit film. Well, we're not going to do a Hobbit film, but it's, you know, but it's going to be CGI. You know, it's all good. It's going to be straight to DVD.
Hey, Peter Jackson's going to direct it. No, Guillermo del Toro's going to direct it.
Now he's not directing. Now Peter Jackson's doing it. Well, it's going to be, we're not going to try to split it into two movies. Now we are doing it as two movies. Now we're not going to do it in Lucina. So all of this is, these are just all negotiating tactics, right? I mean, that's the whole thing, is they're just trying to screw concessions out of somebody.
Well, supposedly it all has to do with, you know, how Warner Brothers is going to spend their money, because it's going to cost about $500 million for them to, like, make this stinking movie. And they need to know, you know, that wherever they spend their money, they're going to make their deadlines and everything's going to go on time. And so anyway, excluding tourism money, the films already bring in $500 million a year for New Zealand. And
Jesus.
It helps the country fashion a reputation as a good place for movie making.
Well, I got to say that, you know, they really... It's not like it was just happenstance. I mean, I guess if someplace else, if New Zealand had just looked flat out wrong for Lord of the Rings, Jackson probably would have gone somewhere else. But it was a nice, it was a nice little coincidence that it looked so flawlessly like what everybody thinks Middle Earth was. I mean, my sister, who's a way, way bigger Lord of the Rings, it's like she can write her name in Elvish and crap. I mean, it's just, you know, whatever. She's one of them. She got married barefoot in the park with flowers threaded through her hair.
Did they get the wedding rings with the? The little inscriptions on them?
No,
from the Lord of the
no,
Rings,
no, no, they did not. But she was the one who introduced me to this, and she's just a Tolkien freak. And she's, you know, she's totally one of those. I love my sister, I really do. But she's one of those like the Silmarillion readers, you know?
Oh yeah.
Where she like knows all the indices or whatever, the appendices of all the different books. And we would actually sit there and we would watch the movies on DVD. You know, after with they came out like a couple holidays in a row, we would somehow all end up watching like Fellowship of the Ring. And she would actually just say, well, you know, really what they've done is they've taken something from the appendix of the Two Towers and they've moved it halfway through the first film. So she's one of those. But when she first saw Fellowship of the Ring, she said that she was astounded. She said it was just like Jackson had reached into her head and had just pulled out what she thought Middle Earth looked like. And apparently that's just like what New Zealand looks like all the time. So I don't see how they can not film it there. Who is the guy, and I forget his name, Ian blah, 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 that played played Bilbo? Am I going to get the wrong guy? Am I thinking of Who's the guy who played Bilbo Baggins in Lord of the Rings?
Oh,
His name is escaping me at the moment.
Yeah.
I had it until just now.
Yeah.
Have they? I mean, have they gotten as far to talking about casting in any way?
Well, they're talking about Martin Freeman from the British Office. He apparently has been cast as
And is that
Bilbo.
Tim?
Yeah,
okay.
Tim. And
right.
He's also, he plays Dr. Watson, in fact, in this brand new Sherlock that I was talking about earlier.
I'm a big fan of that guy. And I like to see those guys from the British Office sort of breaking out and you know, in appearing in different things. Because that's a show where you feel like everybody could be typecast so easily. So, okay.
No,
well,
he's really terrific. He's a good actor.
I approve. All right. There's your Geek Watch for Monday right here on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
By the Sons of Warvan, I shall avenge you.
Next. Loneliness and cheeseburgers are a dangerous mix.
You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Here in just a few moments, we'll be joined by Greg Nibbler and Sarah X. Dillon from Fun Employment Radio. They will be in the studio with us. Don't forget, coming up immediately following this program, you're going to hear an episode of AZ, which was the zombie drama that aired originally in Portland a couple years back, an ongoing zombie-based radio drama, which is produced and created by Aaron Duran and Jason Crump. And we'll be airing a special live interview with those guys tonight and then on Sunday. And as Halloween, we'll be doing a back-to-back marathon of all of those episodes. That is back-to-back on Sunday for Halloween, along with that interview with Aaron and Jason and so forth. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program, made possible in part by fine business partners such as Squires Electric. Find out more about them at squireselectric.com. That is squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609. And you've got the wiring that needs redone. It needs augmented. It needs to be repaired, revamped, anything else like that. You can find out more about it by going to SquiresElectric.com. Whether it's Ethernet wiring, whether it's electrical wiring, doesn't matter. Whether this is something where you're trying to get your home updated or you're just, you know, you're just tired of running like one power squid into another all throughout your home. They can actually take care of that for you, and it's going to be faster, it's going to be safer, and it's going to be cheaper than you trying to do it yourself and just making a mess of the entire works, which you would. Free estimates can be had, so you know about how much you're going to pay for that. No job too large or too small. They've done everything from a single socket to an entire building. 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
We have a job watch. Let's do the job watch.
Before we do that, actually, we'll do the job watch in one moment. Let's welcome to the Rick Emerson Radio Program from Fun Employment Radio, Sarah X. Dillon and Greg Nibbler. Hello, how are you?
Hello.
Hey, I didn't know if you guys were going to be situated, but here we are. All right.
No, I know. I'm a little flabbergasted right now. Here, and somebody who was on here before is a lot less deaf than me. I can't hear you.
Really?
There
it's
we
usually
go.
The other way around.
I know.
Is that the thing? Do you do this where it's like you will, somebody else has been using your headphone jack or whatever, and then you have that moment where you plug in the headphones and you can't hear anything, and you look down and it's been set at some reasonable volume level for another person, and then you're just sad. And you it's like you want to sit in a temple and burn a candle for the death of your hearing. To say, well,
that's
it was nice.
I know when people like pick up your headphones accidentally, and they're like, "Whoa,
yeah."
Oh God, these
speaking of which, those are some nice, fancy looking headphones you're
thank
wearing there.
Thank you. I just got them. They were a birthday present, actually.
Without things torn and ripped and falling off them and shredding little pieces of plastic everywhere they go.
I always find little pieces of plastic in my hair from those old headphones.
So you got those as a present, so you don't know from where they came.
Yeah, I'm not sure where they're from.
All right, because I got to go. Because the headphones you have now are the ones that replace the ones I think that I have here.
Mm-hmm.
They don't think they make mine anymore. But I, just during today's show, I've done that thing of just finding five or six pieces of plastic, you know, like littered. It's like this sort of like black confetti all over everything I own because my headphones are just degenerating.
Don, have you taken a picture of his hair yet today?
What's up with my hair?
Oh, yeah, that is quite
huge.
The,
you have like a pompadour going on.
You do. You have it is standing straight up.
Oh, God.
Up
Brian Setzer.
Do I have Edward Cullen hair?
You do.
A little bit, yeah.
Fail. All right. It was
no,
just,
it doesn't look bad. It just is very, very
I'm
tall.
Rick Emerson's sparkly vampire.
I'm late on a haircut. I've developed this like anal retentive thing with my hair where I don't, you know, because guys typically do the once. Greg, how often do you get your haircut done?
Probably once every 3 or 4 months.
Really? Well, yeah. You got long hair, though, so I guess it doesn't. It's not really noticeable if your hair goes, goes without being trimmed or whatever.
No, yeah. I mean, I just cut like 2 inches off of it a couple of weeks ago, but yeah.
All right, but I mean, yeah. but just like if you're late on a haircut, it's not.
No.
Because I have relatively short hair, especially compared to what I used to be. But I used to do the once a month thing, which is how I think most short haired guys.
Oh,
like, if
yeah.
you were to ask Patrick, he probably says, you know, like he's probably got like one day a month or whatever that he goes to do.
You are so overestimating my husband's interest in personal hygiene.
Or does he just do it when you finally tell him it looks bad?
He lets it. Well, when I first met him, he had like this huge hair, and I made some crack about it. Within 15 minutes of us meeting, he said something. He goes, he was self-conscious. I really need a haircut. And I said, no, that whole Willie Ames, eight is enough thing is working for you. And then I realized that, oh, wait, not the way to flirt. Stop it. But yeah, he told me.
Like a 12-year-old boy.
He's always been like that kind of guy where he just lets it get way too long, then would get it cut like so short it looked like he was about to go into the army.
Yeah.
And then let it go for like 6 months and then get it. But now he has like a regular job, so he tries to get it cut regular. But just last night he was looking, he's going, I need to get my hair cut. I'm starting to get a mullet. He's looking in the back, and it's getting curly in the back.
And that's my thing, too, is I would always wait, and then I would get it cut. And then it's really easy for me to look like a 12-year-old boy if it's like too short at all. So I've developed this whole thing. No one really cares about this. This is the definition of a thing that I'm wasting time with. But I get it cut every 2 weeks. Because that way, because my whole thing there is that way it always kind of looks the same. Because I had this – it's that thing where, like, you want your hair to look good and so you get it cut, but you don't want anybody to know that you just got it cut. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't want to be the guy who looks like he just got a haircut. Because then every jackass at every office is like, hey, you know, got your ears lowered, champ. And so it's like I just want it to look good without people noticing.
I know I should get my hair cut, like, every 4 to 6 weeks or whatever, and I just don't because I've only found, like, one person who I really like to cut my hair, and she's really awesome, and – I have to like go downtown and spend like $50, and I just like don't want to spend $50 to get my hair cut. And I love her, and she's awesome, and she does a great job. But it's like every time I think about spending $50 to get my hair cut, I go. So I just let it go until it's so awful. I feel like I should be like living under a bridge.
That's me too. I only get my hair cut like once a year.
Yeah,
because I'll keep scissors in my bathroom and just like trim up my bangs. But yeah, I can't even remember the last time I got my hair cut. Maybe February.
See, but that's another thing that you can make work that like other people can't. It's like having blue hair and whatever. Like that's not gonna like 99.999% of people could not like do what you do and make it work. There's just no way.
That's true.
And it would terrify me, dude, to cut my own hair.
Oh yeah,
like you do.
No.
Yeah, take scissors or that. I'm gonna do something awful.
I've done
if that
it
happens.
Before.
I used to
just cut the bottom. I used to just like. You know, just even it up on the bottom because you can do something like that to yourself.
Do you ever see the chicks come into work and it's like their bangs are so short and you immediately know what happened, which is that they kept doing it at an angle. It was slanted. And they're like, well, I'll fix it with the next cut. And there was no fixing it. And it just got shorter and shorter and shorter. I will do that with my sideburns sometimes where I will.
I've noticed that like some days, one day you'll have sideburns and the next day you won't.
Oh, yeah.
What happened?
Here's what happens. Guys know this. It's because this is the other reason I get my hair cut every other week is because you leave the haircutting place and your sideburns look great. And then after about like 7 or 8 days, they get all grungy and they're just starting to get, they look overgrown. And you're also trimming them by looking into a mirror where you have no depth perception. It's like a two-dimensional image and you have no idea the front to back relative position of the razor. So then they start to like slant backwards, like it's like they're being blown back by the wind or something, or they're curving forward like you're going to join Slayer or something. And so as a result, And then I'll try to trim them myself, and then it's that thing of just bringing them up and up and up and up because I can never get them right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I did that to myself in high school with my eyebrows. Because I was doing the thing where I was I was 16 years old. I was home alone. I was attempting to light a marijuana cigarette on the stove, and apparently I had like one strand of hair that was hanging down. And it caught fire and it went whoosh, straight up. And it burnt a little bare patch on my eyebrow, like about an eighth of an inch, quarter inch in from the inside corner of my eyebrow. So I went, crap. I said, oh, no, I'll fix it. And so I took a razor and I just shaved that little quarter inch off. And then, of course, my eyebrows didn't match. So I had to shave like a quarter inch off of the inside of the other eyebrow. And then I had like these weird eyebrows for a while
that started halfway.
They started too far in.
Okay, now let me ask
that
you this.
That always throws me off when people overpluck it and their eyebrows start way too far in.
Well, and the eyebrows. Here's the thing about eyebrows is they're weird because have you ever seen anybody who has no eyebrows at all, like not even painted on?
Yeah.
The weird thing is, at least for me, if you see somebody who has no eyebrows, which I have a couple times, it becomes really hard to tell how old they are, and I don't know why that is. It's a weird sort of marker where that's how you determine their age. The other thing is, and I don't know if this is true or not. I always heard growing up that if you shaved off your eyebrows or lost them or something, they might not come back.
That actually, I think that's somewhat true because actually there's a relative in my wife's family, I won't say what her name is, but she shaved her eyebrows off so much they don't grow back anymore. So they're always drawn on.
Oh, wow.
Always.
I have some drawn-on eyebrow friends, too.
Really? Yeah, I mean, it's really weird when you see her early in the morning and she doesn't have them there. And before she draws them on, it's just completely blank.
Did she shave them, or was it like an accident or something?
No, I think it was intentional. Because she was doing it, I don't know.
Some of the girls do that, like shave them off, and like they want to draw like.
Yeah,
well, that'll also happen if you over pluck your eyebrows. Because like years of like plucking in between my eyebrows, so I didn't have a unibrow. I don't actually grow.
It just trains the hair not to grow there.
The follicles are just dead.
They've given up.
Nothing will give up. So I think if you over pluck your eyebrows, there's a point at which they just won't grow at all.
Actually, you know, the medical hair restoration place where I went a couple years ago, they actually do a thing where they will transplant hair from elsewhere in your body, like onto your eyebrows.
I remember you saying that.
And I swear to God, they'll onto your eyelids too if you don't have eyelashes.
Wow.
I thought about finding out how much of that stuff is that Brooke Shields was advertising on TV to paint on to get thicker eyelashes.
Oh, I saw that in Claire Danes advertising it too. And like that makes them grow to about 2 inches long.
It must cost a fortune, and obviously your insurance isn't going to cover it. Mm. But I've always thought, man, I want thicker eyelashes. And then I realized, is that really that important to me? But they make you want these things.
I am mesmerized by that commercial every time I watch it. I'm just like, I want to look this up. I want thicker, longer, fuller lashes.
I don't even know what commercial. Is it like a mascara?
It's some kind of a medical treatment, and it's a liquid that
like a Rogaine thing for your eyes.
Yeah, and you brush it on your eyelid, like along your lash line. And supposedly Brooke Shields and Claire Danes both say that they grew thicker real eyelashes.
That just seems crazy. Like, they have the before and after pictures, and they're significantly longer.
Yeah.
That's weird. I wonder what the potential side effects of that.
Yeah.
One of the potential side
hairy
effects
eyeball.
Is...
Hairy eyeball. No.
It could change the color of your eye.
And your eyelids.
Wow.
Yeah. I was noticing that because Claire Danes has like light blue eyes, and I'm like, oh, but her eyes don't look like that, because it said that they could change brown, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What? They'll stain your eyeballs?
Maybe. Well, irises.
I was going to say, that's like a net loss, I think.
I don't mind if I have like slightly different colored eyes if I would have thick, luxurious eyelashes. It's like, Dawn, your eyes aren't as green anymore. Now they're more brown.
Your solid black eyes.
Look at my eyelashes.
Can you even see them under the shadow of my long eyelashes?
The only reason I even thought of the eyebrow thing and them not growing back is when I was in, I guess I would have been in maybe 11th or 12th grade. I was in high school. But our... I'll just say his name. I won't give his last name. His name is Phil. If Phil's listening, Phil knows who he is. That Phil vanished home at lunch one day. And the reason he vanished home at lunch is because he had come to school that morning. This is like in 1990, 91. So I would have been a junior or senior. He'd come to school and he'd notched his eyebrows like Vanilla Ice.
Lord.
And that was like in that one fragment of a second when Vanilla Ice was awesome, before he became like a tool, and everybody was like, oh, Vanilla Ice is great. And so Phil was not it's not like he was an outcast or something, but he was in drama, so it's like there's really only so high you can climb the social ladder from the drama class. And he decided this was like his key to being more popular. He would just like zzz, zzz, and he came to school, eyebrows all notched up, and then he vanished home at lunch because he had been informed, I think, by everyone's laughter that was a bad idea. And so he would painted them on. And I remember that was like then it was like every day he would check in the mirror to see if they'd grown back, because he'd heard that they weren't ever going to grow back. And he just had these like nightmare scenarios. He goes of having to paint his eyebrows on like for the rest of his life.
I sometimes think that like I'm mildly autistic or something, because I'm not really good at registering like changes in people's appearance. Like I'll know something's changed, but I don't know what it is. And I saw our friend Cable Hashitani at a movie last week, and I had this vague sense somewhere in the back of my head, like, Cable looks different. I'm not sure why. And my husband says, "You have hair." And I went, "Oh yeah. You have hair." And he said, yes, and eyebrows.
Because he has the shaven headed thing going on.
Right, but apparently he's also shaved his eyebrows off while he was shaving his head, which I don't think I was ever really cognizant of the fact he had no eyebrows.
I like guys who can have the confidence to do that. Just I'm going to get rid of my eyebrows. Gone.
But it's so sad, because I was just going, he looks different somehow, but I don't know why. It's like, well, he has hair and eyebrows. But I didn't figure that out right away.
Just so we can, before we move forward here, because we got to get things underway, because you guys are going to be Fun Employment Radio.
Yes.
Coming up later on tonight. That'll be posted by 6 p.m. or so, usually.
Yes, indeed.
Probably earlier today, because it's his lovely wife's birthday, so he has to hustle on out.
Tell her we said happy birthday.
I will indeed.
So Fun Employment Radio, you can hear that at funemploymentradio.com, and coming up later this afternoon. We should take a moment to talk about CJ's High Climbing Services, which is one of our fine business partners. Here at the Rick Emerson Radio Program, CJ's highclimbing.com is the website. It's just like it sounds, CJ's highclimbing.com. So if you've got messy, unpleasant, or potentially lethal maintenance chores around the house, especially is like now where it's like you look outside, it's just like that. It's like you're living inside the Halloween tree just all the time. It's just the tornadoes of wind and leaves and things swirling around.
How about you, Greg Dibbler? Are you a
are you one? Handy?
Are you prone to climbing up ladders and doing scary things up high?
Only when I absolutely have to. I hate doing it. I'm terrible. I own a house and I'm terrible at keeping it up. Yeah, I do
not
like
climbing.
Is it
just because
you're
lazy or because you're afraid that you're going to paralyze yourself?
I'm afraid I'm going to paralyze myself or cut something down and damage someone else's property.
That's a thing too. And then also this is like where you see the like the cables, like the telephone pole, the wires going through the trees, and you're never quite sure like which of those are going to kill you and which of them aren't.
Yes.
You know, like some of them are insulated and like some of them aren't. It's like you know that like the wood isn't going to conduct electricity, so but you're always afraid that you're going to cut the wrong branch or cut the wrong leaves and it's go through the cables and then they're on the house and it's a whole thing.
Yeah, knockout power for half of the city. Yeah.
And then you're the guy who's on the mm-hmm. area man, and then it shows you being wheeled into a burn unit.
Yes.
So you can the key is you know call somebody else. Just don't
and I start calling
screw
you Crispy Nibbler.
503-228-9278 is the phone number for CJ's climbing services. I'd like one Crispy
Nibbler,
please.
I don't want
Nibbler,
to encourage that nickname.
Crispy Niblets.
That sounds like a thing you get at the Tony Roma's, like right when next to the blooming onion.
I'll have an order of Crispy Nibbler.
That's awesome. You guys have a bar sponsor. One of your sponsors is a
yes.
It's Cassidy's.
Cassidy's.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Cassidy should totally have a snack called the Crispy Nibbler. Come on. You know that's a
awesome.
Great idea.
I think Bob might be down with that.
Yeah, he could.
Wow. We should have done this for your birthday. We should have sprung this on you the next time your birthday came around. Anyway, you can contact CJ's High Climbing Services at cjshighclimbing.com or 503-228-9278. So Gary, Sean, Bo, Lauren, any of the crew will come out and do all those things for you, so that does not happen to you. All right. You were listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. Well, we're going to wrap things up here in just a few, but we were going to mention the fact that it's, I think, a year ago. Was mm-hmm. it today? Saturday? It was a year ago.
Saturday, yes.
I guess, because it was the 20-something or 23rd, 20 23rd. Whatever,
23rd. Yeah.
That everything sort of came to an end, at CBS. So I don't know. I don't really know what else there is to say at this point, except to say that a couple things. First of all, you guys had Court and Fatboy on
mm-hmm. on Friday,
which is a fantastic show, and then you guys were on their show as well.
Yes.
That morning. So if anybody wants to hear that, then go to funemploymentradio.com, where every day's show is archived, and you can hear all the merriment and magic. And I don't know what observations they had about that entire thing. The only thing that I noticed, and I didn't realize this, is it true that did you save the bottle that you and Greg bought on your way to be fired by Scott Mihalik
a year ago? This is the bottle that we purchased before we went into our meeting.
So what? A bottle of what?
Of Pendleton whiskey.
Now is that a
that is my new favorite whiskey, by the way.
It is so good.
Patrick Allen Coleman, who just left the Mercury, he brought this over to our ham-fisted radio show a couple of times, and he just like gave me a half a bottle of it last week, and I've been sitting at home sipping on this all week.
Is that an upscale whiskey?
It is. It's an upscale mm-hmm. Canadian whiskey. And you think of Canadian whiskey, you think it's like kind of cheap, not really tasty crap. This stuff is delicious.
All of my favorite whiskeys from Canada.
So what was
the
time frame there? Let me just back up for 1 second, because the one thing that I don't think we discussed last time is that and we've told the story before, but I went to, we thought they were going to fire us on Friday, and I think that somebody just didn't talk to somebody, and that didn't happen. And so we all had to come back on Friday afternoon to sit in the office and be told, like, your services are no longer required.
And I had to call all of you guys, right? Because I was the only phone number that they had had. And
well,
so they're like,
well, they've been calling me. I just wasn't answering.
Yeah, I
and it was a lot of messages like, dude, this is Ditch, to whom I'd never spoken before. Like, I didn't even think he knew who I was or knew my name or anything. And he's like, you got to come in, and, so give me a call back now. Mihalik left me a message, a whole bunch of people. And I was just like, well, I know what that's about. They can wait. And I just figured that I would come in Monday and make it really awkward for everybody and make them fire me, like, in front of everybody else. But I think I talked to you, and you finally were like,
I was like, Rick, come on.
If I'm going to drink, I want to start now. Let's go get fired. Who called Greg? Was it, did I or did Sarah?
Well, actually, Sarah called me and told me what was going on. And then after I hung up with her, I actually, like, right after I hung up, that's when I got a call from Mihalik, too.
Yeah. And I remember I was, like, walking on hot.
Since I already knew what it was, I'm like, all right.
You answered the phone.
Yeah. I was just like, okay, let's get it over with.
I know. I remember I was, like, walking outside of the red light, and I had just left there, and I saw this phone number. I'm like, oh, finally. We'd been waiting all day, and it was, like, 4 o'clock. I'm like, great. So now we have to fight rush hour traffic, drive all the way back downtown.
Did he give you the, well, we just need to talk to you for a minute.
Yeah, it was just, I'm like, don't pull any punches. He's like, hi, Sarah. I was wondering if you'd come in. I'm like, I know. I'm like, I know right. what this is about. I'm like, don't try and sugarcoat it. We know. you're not surprising us by anything.
So then en route to the firing, you stopped and bought the whiskey.
So yes. Greg drove to my house, and then we both drove in my car downtown. We went to the liquor store that was across the street.
Okay, by the Plaid Pantry.
Yeah, uh-huh. So before uh-huh. we actually got into the parking lot, we were just like, yeah, screw that. They can wait a few more minutes. So we actually drove up. Went to the liquor store, and we're like, okay, the one day that we're going to be fired, we're not going to skimp on the whiskey.
Yeah.
We actually sprung for, like, the good stuff.
Awesome.
Yeah, and then went and parked in the parking lot and waited for you and Tim, and then we all walked in together.
I think Tim...
Yeah. Tim wasn't there.
Yeah, Tim was...
He was later on.
I felt like a dick about this, like, forever. I think I actually forgot to call Tim, just because there was so much confusion about who'd been called and who hadn't, and whether we were going to go in or whether we were going to wait until Monday or whatever. And I think in all of that, I forgot to call Tim, and then I realized it later. And, you know, and he, I think he had actually left me a message. Like, I seem to be getting a lot of calls from CBS. Does anybody know why that is? Something good happening? Was it on the air? I can't remember if we talked about this on the air or not. The last time you guys were on, and I guess it was when we were talking about your 200th show, did we mention on here on the air the business about how they were originally going to fire us Monday?
I don't think that was discussed on air.
Mm-mm.
Oh, well, I'll just say it now then.
Yeah.
So, you know, because what do I care? So, you know, there was that whole thing, the mothership thing that KUFO
the
was playing on there.
Thing, yeah.
And I should say, by the way, for the record, it's not like I really don't just sit and hold a grudge about this or just sit and like replay it over my head. I mean, I think all of us have moved on.
Yeah. I don't really think about it. It's always fun to just kind of like reminisce like a year ago.
Yeah. So it's like, I remember it, but I don't dwell on it. But there was that weird thing where they started playing the looped video of like, attention, people of port, we've come to rape your ears or whatever. I mean, whatever the hell the thing even was, it was like basically just threatening everybody.
It was quite intimidating. Yeah.
And so they played this recorded thing all weekend on KUFO, kind of counting down to the big, you know, the big staff change and the big, you know, sort of format tweak and whatever. And it was doing a countdown. It was like, you know, 2 days, 5 hours, 3 minutes, and 21 seconds until whatever. And that ran all weekend starting Friday afternoon, I guess, starting at 3 when Court and Fatboy would have been on. Mm. They started it right as those guys were getting fired, and it ran up until 6 a.m. Monday when Kid Chris or whoever it was, it went on and, you know, started the new iteration of the station. And anyway, I found out then later on, I found this out, I don't know, maybe 6 months or so after it happened, that their plan originally was to just let that run all Friday, all Saturday, and all Sunday, but actually to not fire us until Monday.
So they were going to show up at 4 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah, they were just going to run. They weren't even going to hint that any firings were taking place. They were just going to let that thing run all weekend long without actually, like, telling us what was going on, as though we wouldn't have figured it out.
Yeah.
Like, that wouldn't have filled everybody in the company with just an unbelievable panic. I mean, like, even more so than they already were.
So were they planning to actually show up and fire you, or were they figuring you'd just show up and Kid Chris would be there and you'd figure out, oh, there's someone else in the studio?
Well, that's the
never
thing.
Mind.
That's so awkward.
That is a thing that I have been told from an unimpeachable source, that that they were going to run, the plan was to run it all weekend, and then just to fire us Monday. But that's the thing, is like, they never figured out the actual logistics of how the Monday thing would happen. Because it's like that morning show starts at like 5:30.
Yeah.
And it's like, and presumably we would be there earlier, hey, because we're going to do our show today. But it's like, so would everybody else, because it's their first day on the air. So those guys probably would have been there like midnight or something.
Yeah.
So it would have been this like incredibly awkward thing where it's like us and our replacements and the people who are going to fire us would all have been there, you know, at like 3 a.m. or something. It made no sense at all.
It just seems really passive and lazy. Like, might as well just rip the Band-Aid off instead of making us wait.
Seriously.
That's weird.
Yeah, so somebody, I think, it was brought to their attention that was like a dick move and also stupid.
Mm.
So that I think, is originally why they let us go home on that Friday without firing us.
You mean after we sat around for an hour waiting to be fired with all our stuff?
No one showing up.
Seriously, like, doing everything but an all paid. We're in the office downstairs. Come fire us.
Every door opening, we all turn our heads. Is that person? Is that the one that's going to fire us?
I remember we just all sat in there.
It's just Brent. Okay.
We just sat in the room laughing. Every time a door opened, we just laugh and be like, nope, not them. We're like, I guess we're gonna go.
I mean, you know, it was like we were in some Turkish prison or something, where the guy comes in with the gun full of blanks and, okay, Yankee, you live another day, maybe I shoot you tomorrow. Anyway.
And I still have my whole box of all of my stuff that I grabbed, you know, from the day we were fired. And I was looking through it today, just trying to find something that would be like kooky or funny. But it was just a whole bunch of really old, depressing, like, Shine Down playlists and stuff, like the song breakdowns that we had to play.
That was my thing. It was like all of my notes from interviewing the guy from Slipknot or whatever, you know. And I just, you know, and I did the same thing this weekend. All I brought is you remember the book in which we put people who were going to be dealt with?
Book.
So I got out the book. That was the one thing. Everything else there, you know, was just, I mean, it was just like notes for things that I don't remember doing. Things. Mm-hmm. Here's just my final thought before we wrap this up because I don't want to run over time. But this is a weird thing. I was in Vancouver just a couple weeks ago. Remember that time we had to chronicle some people who were living in a goddamn truck? That seems like a thing that I dreamt.
Wow.
I just thought about that the other day, and I realized that that entire thing just seemed like some horrible, weird, like, waking nightmare that I had. I mean—
It was awful.
That went on for weeks.
It was
never-ending. And we were, like, all trying to be go-get-em team players, so we were driving to Vancouver all the time. I will never forget the smell of that truck either.
That
smell.
Just in retrospect, it's just like the strangest thing. I mean, it was that whole – I think that was the way that I would sum up that entire period for the show. It was just surreal.
It did feel like a dream. You're right.
Yeah, it was just weird.
Well, I remember coming
weird.
In as a guest and you guys either – whenever like even just the subject of the truck would come off, if you weren't on the air, all of you would just go –
oh. God,
I remember
truck.
You like you know, damn Kings of Leon songs playing in the background and the three of you going – oh, God, we got to come up with something else to do to those people in the truck.
Yeah.
What are we going to do? I don't know.
Running for the door every time that Kings of Leon, oh, God.
Jesus.
And everyone just book it and get as far away from that room as possible because we did have, you know, like 15-minute breaks without having to talk.
That was in the 3 minutes that Dawn was allowed to be in the studio.
That was when I was allowed to squeeze in a power nap because we were only talking like 4 minutes an hour.
That's God.
Good I did find times. My old pillow that I would bring.
When you'd go hide
in I remember you. Sleeping actually,
my neck pillow.
Going back and sleeping in the office, just either wake me up.
Yeah, and like I'd sleep in like 9 minute increments.
Yeah, not only was I coming in like to talk for like 5 minutes about a DVD, but apparently I find out later I wasn't supposed to be very smart.
No, you were.
You
and Christy Turnquist.
You were too smart. Can you make her sound a little less intelligent?
Well, and let's finish that sentence. Too smart. For a lady. That's really what that was. You know, I mean, that was, seriously.
Talk more about your boobs, Don.
I think that was the implication. It was just like, it was, you know, you were too smart, you know, too smart for a woman, you know, in their opinion. Yeah. And
We've learned on this show now that that's not necessarily true.
Hey, by the way, did you know that Don's sexual appetite is actually, has grown so massive it cannot be satisfied?
That he seems to have, misinterpreted something.
I'm just going to tell everybody that for the rest of the week. Any guest in the studio, they're all going to hear that from me. It's a little door prize for coming on the show. You get to find out something about Dawn you didn't know before.
Yeah, I'm.
Can the old ball and chain just not keep up with you
ravenous.
Anymore?
All right. I'm sorry. I wish I hadn't done that. That didn't work out. That wouldn't work out the way I thought it was going to.
I just didn't understand what I was supposed to say to
just,
I'm like, go.
Congratulations.
Like
I don't know. It sounded like I was setting you up with her or something.
The thing is, too, that he's actually referencing something that came up in Legion of News. So the people who are, if they just listen to this show, they have no idea why he's saying that. So.
Yeah, I chose poorly there. All right. My absolute final thought is that somebody noted this last, I guess last week when we were talking about, you were talking about some book you were reading. I forget. Mm. I was mentioning that Bill Bryson book, the Short History of Nearly Everything, the science book. And somebody who was used to be sort of associated with the program pointed out something that I had forgotten, which is that we were also, in addition to you and Christy being way too smart, we were also told not to, this is a quote now, not to spend too much time talking about books.
Oh, yeah.
Forgot about that.
And now we're doing this, and it's better. So
honestly, if I can take anything from it, all I know is that I am 100% happier than I was at this point last year.
Seriously, yes. you said it. I think that is so say we all. So
not to say that we didn't all enjoy working together, but you know, it time was, and place. You know,
It was. I think I actually was. I had. Well, you know who I'm talking about. I had lunch with a radio colleague of ours last week, and he asked me about the whole KUFO thing. And I said, if I had to do it again, I'd say yes. I mean, there was no way we could not say yes.
There was no saying no to that.
For a lot of reasons, you know, some of which we've thought about, and some of which people could probably figure out. I mean, there was no. It was just the reality was it was you know there was no way we could turn it down. We had to you know literally and figuratively. I think we probably had to take it. There was probably no alternative. You know, and it was good. And you know, I think we did the best we could. And you know, in a weird situation, and then we'll. You know, did a lot of shows that I thought were really, really great, and painting inside a pretty constrictive series of lines. I think we actually were probably better than probably better than we had any right to be. But, you know, but it is in retrospect a thing that was just ill-advised, I think, almost from the start.
It is pretty funny, though, to look back. Like, I don't look back at it like angry.
It's just
I don't
ridiculous.
Look back in anger. It's just, it's silly.
No, it's
I
just
look
ludicrous.
Back and I'm just like, God, all of us, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning cramming in, like, you know, 30-second sound bites between just crappy songs.
Oh, God.
It's funny if you look back.
I mean, I just remember doing that one show where it was 111 degrees
oh,
in the studio.
God.
Oh, yeah.
Where the heating, the it wasn't that the air conditioning went off, it's like the heat was stuck on. Also, it was summertime, and plus we're in like four of us in a room filled with electrical equipment and watching the temperature go to like 108, 109, 110, 111. Ugh. All right. Well,
I miss the homeless guys who would knock on the window and request songs.
Hey, is it okay if I poop out here? Okay, that's great. Awesome.
You remember Mark Whalen, the guy that was the GM?
Yeah.
You never knew Mark Whalen, did you? He was gone by the time you got there.
Football player guy, right?
He was a Dallas Cowboy.
I've met him, but yeah.
Yeah, and he had become the general manager at KUFO, and a huge guy. He looks like a guy who was an NFL player. And but I remember seeing him coming back from lunch at one point, looking out from my window upstairs down in the parking lot, and there was like a homeless guy like setting up like a hibachi in the middle of the parking lot to get ready to cook himself lunch, and then like whizzing over in a corner, and just seeing Mark Whalen, who's this huge guy. And I'm not saying he wasn't a bad guy, but he seemed like a guy who was like this close to snapping and beating your ass at any moment. And just seeing it, like, it was like a mime sort of a thing, because it was looking out the window, I couldn't hear him, and seeing him just gesturing at the homeless guy, clearly indicating that he was going to like pick the homeless guy up and break him into tiny little homeless pieces if the guy didn't clean up like his full-on like barbecue setup that he had going in the back of the parking lot. In any event, Fun Employment Radio has been going now for over 200 episodes, and you can hear it at funemploymentradio.com. Greg Nibbler and Sarah X Dillon, funemploymentradio.com, Monday through Friday around 6 p.m. Pacific time and so forth. Well, we should probably wrap this up. So tell Katie we said happy birthday.
I will.
And et cetera. All right, don't forget, coming up in mere moments, once this program ends, we're going to have an encore of AZ, the original zombie radio drama that aired a couple years back. For Halloween, we're bringing that back. We're doing one episode per day all week for Halloween. And then this coming Sunday, which is Halloween, we're going to do a back-to-back marathon of the entire series, featuring an interview with Aaron Duran and Jason Crump, talking about the history of AZ and how it came to be and the production of it. And we're going to be taping that actually live tonight around 7 o'clock, and then we'll play it back this coming Sunday as part of that marathon. So that's coming up immediately after the Rick Emerson radio program. All right, we come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk, it is Don Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Kill. Executive producer Bruce Agler. Chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson radio program is made possible by a generous grant from you. It is Monday, October 25th, 2010. And that is the frequency. Kenneth, thank you for listening. Be safe. See y'all tomorrow. AZ is next. Bye now.